everyone. Welcome to the Film Junk Podcast for Monday, November 30th, 2015. This is episode number 542, and my name is Sean.
My name is Jay.
And my name is Frank.
Coming up on this week's episode, we've got a review of Creed. We're also going to be talking about the new trailer for Captain America Civil War. We've got some more stuff we watched, some of your junk mail as well. Thanks for tuning in. Should say, you know, people always, you know, start listening and wonder what happened to Sean's voice. Yes, it got cold, and I got sick again.
You have some sort of autoimmune deficiency.
I do not.
But it's
everybody in our house has something right now.
But it's weird. When we were at SK,
mm-hmm.
I remember getting sick quite a bit. You never got sick.
I know, and now I have kids.
I never get sick. You're sick all the time. What's up?
I told you what's up. The good thing is I generally get over stuff pretty quickly, so just keep rolling with it. I guess the other issue, and this is something I found kind of interesting. At my work, they've changed to more of a open concept. I mean, it was always open concept, but like there's no real cubicles now, so it's just rows of desks with people sitting beside each other, and I've read that also like increases people being absent due to sickness by like 50% in the workplace, something like that. So, you know, could be that too. But
I thought you were gonna say it's cutting in on your ability to, you know, catch up on all these pop culture and
that's
these hot news stories in Hollywood.
It's definitely an issue as well, but you know, what can you do? We should mention a couple things. Steven Spielberg Sci-Fi Premium's out there. Lots of people, I think, enjoyed it over the Thanksgiving long weekend in the U.S. while they were driving home to see their families. Just a beautiful thing. Check that out over at filmjunk.bandcamp.com. We do have this bet that we've got going. There's some responses.
Gentleman's bet.
There's some responses to this over the Krampus pronunciation.
Mm-hmm.
We will officially settle it next week, or will we? But you know, just so people don't think we're ignoring, we appreciate the responses and the comments and on Twitter and whatnot. We will address that stuff next week. But
more importantly, Black Friday, Cyber Monday,
exactly,
your favorite day of the year.
I do love Cyber Monday.
We're getting ready to record, and I got an email.
Yeah, no.
From Amazon.com.
We do have a clip of just prior to starting to record the show, so let's go back and take a listen to that.
What the fuck?
Did you win $1 million?
Did you lose $1 million?
Due to lack of, from Amazon.com. Due to lack of availability.
Well, save it. You gotta save it.
So it sounded there, Frank, like you were pretty shocked and upset and something serious was going on. Do you want to tell us what happened?
Yes, from Amazon. Your Amazon.com order, number 112-67.
No. Don't give your order out. Nope. Oh.
Your lawyer
you're
just
lucky.
Advised
you're
you.
You're lucky.
Thank you. Hello. Due to a lack of availability... Okay. We will not be able to obtain the following items from your order. Bulletproof Blu-ray.
What?
We've canceled the items and apologize for the inconvenience. Where's my gift card or compensation?
That is bullshit.
Now Bulletproof's going to be out of print.
So, well, first of all, I'm pretty shocked you don't already own Bulletproof.
Well, I was waiting for the right price. $4.99 was definitely it.
This was a Black Friday deal specifically, or?
I don't know, but I was putting in a big order on Black Friday and, you know, saw Bulletproof for $5. Throw it in there.
What else did you order?
I don't know. a lot of stuff.
Can we go through
all movies or?
I mean, I thought that's the whole point of this segment is we're going to talk about all the great deals we got on Black Friday.
Let's see here. What's some stuff that I ordered? Come on.
Like he doesn't remember. He just ordered so much stuff.
Come on. What is going on? These Amazon. Download from the server, please. What did I get?
Any Amiibos?
22 Jump Street.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How much?
$9.
Yeesh.
What?
Black Friday?
Yeah.
Okay.
Man Who Knew Too Little.
Didn't own that already?
No.
Oh, my
God. How much?
$9.99. Not great. Matchstick Men.
How much?
$9.99.
Probably but the regular price on that one.
Yeah. Like I said, it was great.
It's just a bunch of stuff. You started the my order, most shameful and then everything purchase was... I'm starting an order, so...
Was Jurassic World for $9.99. Just to have it.
Yeah.
Even though I hated it.
I understand.
Hated it. Three starred it, anyway. Inside Out. Also not a great price. $17, I think. Mm.
You know, it's all right.
Just Black Friday fail.
Blue is the warmest color for $15, which is pretty good.
Criterion.
Yes. Okay. It says Criterion. I'm a little worried it's a secondary seller that it's not going to be the Criterion edition.
I don't think it was released otherwise.
It was in Europe.
You think it's a bootleg?
Oh. You think it might be a European one?
Because it's a secondary seller, yeah. I'm a little nervous.
What was the picture of...
The Criterion.
Well, then you have evidence against them. I hope when you
so, but I
take them to Judge Joe Brown.
But I can't return mine.
Because it's a secondary seller?
No, because they're opened before I get them.
You are so gross. Wait, you ordered that, and then how did you watch it? You watched it.
I watched it, then I ordered it.
Oh, okay.
I didn't even know, and I can't wait till we get to Criterionitis, because I didn't even know it was Criterion when I watched it. Anyway,
it was subconsciously
no, it wasn't.
In there,
which is exactly why afterwards you had to buy it
to never watch it again. Mm-hmm. The Guest for $9.99. What else?
So it was mostly just Blu-ray shop.
It was all Blu-rays. Huh. I bought digital stuff on the Xbox sale, but
right,
that's it. There's a few more I can't remember. You just start adding anything to that cart. Gets out of control.
Mm-hmm. Jay?
Still, Larger Than Life is still out of stock, though, so.
Oof. Well, I drove down to just outside of New York City on the weekend to do some unexpected last-minute pickup shooting for How to Build a Time Machine. Drove down alone.
So... You were crossing the border on Black Friday, not for shopping.
Right. And I was concerned that it was a mistake leaving on Black Friday and that I should have... I was like, well, maybe I should go the day before, but then it was like, well, that's Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
Then what if I go the day after? Well, there's still sales and it's a Saturday, so it could be busy. And then I thought, well, maybe I should leave at 6 in the morning, but maybe people are going over to get those sweet TV deals to line up or whatever. So I decided I'm just going to go. I'll wait in the line, whatever. It's a seven-hour drive-ish. What's another hour? Excuse me. And I drove over there around 9:30. Zero cars. I mean, there were some cars there, but I was able to drive right up to a booth.
Wow.
Which I guess is because of the two things. The fact that we now have Black Friday up here as well, mm-hmm. whereas before there was only the American Black Friday. And then I think we started Cyber Monday, bringing that up here.
Yeah, well, I mean, just that Cyber Monday was online anybody could order, basically. Yeah. But
then now we have Black Friday and the dollar being so terrible, I guess it's not worth people going over.
And... They have extra people working on that day, too, to handle the high traffic.
Yeah, but if it was high traffic, there would have been... Nope. It's not like all the booths were open. It was
completely dead. It's another reason.
Not a reason at all. But the... of course, with there being no traffic, I was delighted. And then ended up getting pulled over and had to explain that I was driving to New York to visit my friend who's building a time machine. And it's always a pain in the ass... trying to explain to these people that I'm not going to be making money while I'm down there, and they are rude as fuck. even after they figure out that there's nothing nefarious going on, you're not going down there to blow anything up, to steal any money from their country, to bring over illegal Kinder eggs. And they still are rude. And I was asking them some questions, and one of the guys tried answering, and the other one, like, interrupted him, and they were even rude to each other. It's such an amazing, amazing thing. But I guess they have to put on that tough sort of rude, no business attitude.
Yeah.
The guy in front of me, they told him
no business here,
to take his hand out of his pocket because it was rude. Anyways, so then I got past that, first stop on my trip to my shoot was Barnes & Noble. Picked up a few additional Criterion releases just before the sale ended earlier that week, Don't Look Back, and Ikiru came out. So I got those, and 50% off Criterion sale. Additional 10% off Barnes & Noble membership. And one item, Black Friday, 30% off coupon. We're talking about adding deal after deal after deal. So I ended up getting Don't Look Back for $12.
Wow. How'd that feel?
Well, it feels good, obviously, but it doesn't feel as good as how it sounds, because it's like 50%, then another 30, and then another 10. It's like you're getting it for 90% off, but it doesn't work that way, because they do the 50% and then they take the 30% off that new total and then the 10% off that new total. So,
right.
But still a great deal. And then I moved I moved down to the Best Buy. Surprisingly, all of these stores were not busy. There was lines formed and people working at the cash registers to direct you where to go, but there was nobody in line. I mean, maybe earlier in the morning with the door crashers, those are the big things, but either way, I cashed in huge. Got Magic Mike XXL for $7.99. Got... what did I say? Oh, in Nonstop, finally, for $7.99. And Michael Bay's The Island for $4.99.
Which I also got.
In preparation, just maybe for something down the road. Mm-hmm. Just in case. And that was it. That was my big Black Friday haul.
I also got Talented Mr. Ripley, Jupiter Ascending, Inner Space, Christine, did I say The Guest? I think I did. Mm-hmm. Squid and the Whale, even though it's a disgusting two-pack. Secret Life of Walter Mitty, 1941. It Follows, Silicon Valley Season 1, The Island, Goodfellas Remaster, Manglehorn.
What's the best deal?
Best deal? Nothing, really.
So you just did some shopping.
Well, I mean... Everything was essentially below $10.
So nothing compares in your sale items to my $7.99 nonstop purchase.
Oh, they all compare to that. A lot of these were $10 or $7, so about the same.
Huh.
You know, nothing all that special.
I went to Target and their sale was shit. Unfortunately, I had everything I wanted already. They had the Lego Movie on Blu-ray for $6.99. Didn't buy it. I don't like it.
Well, I love buying stuff I don't like. And I'm just waiting.
Although I did just say I bought The Island for $4.99.
You're going to love it. Right now in my checkout, I'm waiting to see if Man from U.N.C.L.E. It just dropped down $3.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for it to hit.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Below $15. I have a feeling it's going to happen tonight at some point.
Lightning deal?
Can't you just buy it and then they'll retroactively refund?
No.
Why?
They don't do that.
Yes, they do.
No.
I've had it happen
tons of times. Not on Black Friday weekend, bud.
It's not Black Friday weekend anymore.
Well, the whole cyber, all that, they don't do it. I don't believe. because they're actively matching deals.
Like, but they would be matching their own deal.
No. Well, anyway. I got Team America in the cart, which was a prime deal for most of the weekend, for more than it is right now. A delicious $6.37. And I got Trainwreck in here too. Currently at $12.75. Just waiting on that Man from Uncle. Give it to me. Drop that. Oh, I want Spy. I didn't get on Spy when it was $9.99. I'm a little upset about that. That's my one Black Friday regret.
So do you have these set up to notify you?
No, can you do that?
I think you can.
Oh, no, I feel like an idiot. I probably missed my chance at Man from Uncle.
Yeah, that's tough. Well, I had my eyes out for some middle-of-the-road technology. I was hoping for some big deals on that stuff.
And, lots of Amazon stuff.
Well, I mean, I was sort of, like, on the cusp of, like, I could go for a 4K TV. Saw some listings for some good deals.
Okay deals.
They're pretty good deals, I think. I mean, but... Surprisingly, the problem is most of these deals are in the U.S. and they don't ship to Canada. So, you either have to go over
and
there.
And then your deal is fucked by exchange rate and taxes anyways.
Yeah, well, I still, like, there was one, I had my eye on the Vizio 60-inch 4K, which has...
It's a little big for you.
It's bigger than what I have now. But, I don't know if you guys heard about this. I mean, I'm sure you weren't really paying attention since, you've got your 4K TVs ready to go, but,
beaters.
They are beaters now. The, Dell.com had this TV on for $799, and I saw multiple websites touting it as like the Black Friday deal. And I knew I couldn't get it anyway, cause they didn't ship to Canada, but I was kind of curious and I was looking on some forums and stuff, and everybody said like 1201 hit and it was sold out, gone. So there was a lot of questioning of what the quantity was on those and like who knows. But it's, the thing that I was a little frustrated with, Best Buy in Canada had it on sale for, I think it was $1,300, which, the American deal would have come to about $1,000 Canadian plus shipping, blah, blah, blah. So it was like kind of close, and I was hoping it would go down on Black Friday, but it went up on Black Friday on Best Buy's site in Canada. So I'm just waiting now. Like, I don't know what happened there. But if you see any deals for 4K TVs.
A lot of great console deals, though. I guided a lot of people through the process.
You converted more PS4 people to Xbox.
I was at Toys R Us today looking for Amiibos, and a random customer came up to me and said, "Look, I know you don't work here, but do you know anything about video games?" I go, yeah, I do. I must read as a video game player. In a Toys R Us.
Were you standing in front of the Amiibos at the time?
Yes. And I just was a beacon of light in their search for the perfect Christmas gift at the right price.
So what did you sell them on?
Well, I didn't sell them on anything. I took in all appropriate information, saw where they were at, the situation they were looking at.
And said, don't buy anything.
And ultimately led them towards an Xbox One.
Interesting. I heard that as much as it seems like the tide is turning towards Microsoft, PlayStation still won on Black Friday.
Yep, Copo, go for it.
Yep.
Whatever.
It all comes back to that ad, that one little viral ad they made. I don't think that will ever go away.
Well, we'll be getting into that on the next Game Junk.
Oh, yes.
I'm sure.
Oh, yes, we will. So, anything else you guys need to talk about? No other deals, nothing on Cyber Monday specifically?
Just this current order I've got pending right now.
Okay. Okay. Well, let's get into our review of Creed. We've got a clip. Let's take a listen.
know, I don't even know what I'm doing here because I got other plans in my life and this wasn't part of it. Your father was special. Tell you the truth, I don't know if he's special. Only you're going to know that when the time is right. And it ain't going to come overnight. You're going to take a beat, you're going to take this, you're going to get knocked out, you're going to get up, and you're going to see if you got the right thing. But you got to work hard. I swear to God, if you're not going to do it, I'm out.
Like every punch I ever thrown has been on my own. Nobody showed me how to do this. I'm ready.
So Creed is directed by Ryan Coogler and stars Michael B. Jordan, Sylvester Stallone, and Tessa Thompson. Plot synopsis is, the former world heavyweight champion, Rocky Balboa, serves as a trainer and mentor to Adonis Johnson, the son of his late friend and former rival, Apollo Creed. What did you guys think of Creed?
Well, you're going to have to bleep it. What I say, because I fucking loved it. Sean, bleep that.
Too late. This is
of course
live.
He fucking loved it. It's fucking amazing.
Whoa. Calm down.
You guys riding the critical wave on this one? Is that
I feel like the critical wave's like at a four, where I'm clearly saying the critical...
A four?
I feel if you took a sense of the critical wave right now...
I think it seems... From what I've seen in my tweeting feeds, it seems most people are saying this movie is great.
I saw multiple references to best movie of the year in the running Oscar, for best movie of the year, Oscar potential for Michael B. Jordan.
For Sylvester Stallone.
Not for Michael B. Jordan.
Well, for both, but...
I think they're both great in it, but I've definitely seen it for old Sly, but yeah, sorry.
Does this change your opinion on the movie now that you know where the critical
no,
wave is at?
No, absolutely not. I couldn't be happier with this film. It's perfect in a lot of ways to me. Sorry, I didn't mean to.
It's all right. It's okay. It continues to make the Rocky franchise one of the most interesting franchises because. You look at Creed, and I mean, it's kind of, you could say it's kind of just going down the same path that Rocky Balboa began. But I would love to watch the first Rocky and then Creed right afterwards, or Rocky IV and then Creed right afterwards. They would be very interesting experiences, very different ones. But the fact that, you know, in Creed, they reference events that happened in Rocky IV, which is such a goofier movie that's very much of its time, but still in its own way, a great film for me anyways. I like Rocky IV a lot. But to then, to have a franchise hit that peak where Rocky basically becomes a cartoon character, but still, you still enjoy the characters and everything, but then have that Rocky hero from the 80s slowly lose everything, and not just his money, but, you know, watching a beloved character go through life. There's always in movies the moment where they kill off a character, and it's all, you know, you think like, wow, you know, you get Han Solo dies in Force Awakens, as we all know. And by now. And it's like, wow, I can't believe they did that. What a emotional moment. But in this, it's even more emotional than the death of Han Solo. Because it's not about the death of Rocky. It's about Rocky's loved ones slowly dying off and new people coming into his life and realizing that that's what life is. You know, you don't... magically, unless if you have a loved one, a wife, children, it doesn't all end at once, unless, you know, we're talking murder suicide, like a Chris Benoit situation,
plane crash, car crash.
Sure,
there's options,
but in reality, you get what you get here. You get the one guy who is his wife passed away, his kid has moved away, his best friend's gone, and he's just a lonely guy. He's got friends, but, you know, and this is the Rocky from Rocky IV, who is at the peak of his physical beauty and living life to its fullest, driving in sports cars, listening to Survivor and just boning his wife with that snake bracelet. But now he's all alone, and we've tracked that throughout his franchise life, and it's depressing. Mm-hmm. I mean, Rocky Balboa, I think, was a little more depressing than Creed, because it's like now he's getting new family in a way. But how they handle some of the turns in this, that on paper, there are moments in this film that I think have been joked about previously, like mm-hmm. when people make the jokes about Rocky 15, Rocky 20, Rocky 25, what are we going to get him in a wheelchair, in a boxing ring or whatever? There are some moments in this movie where it's like, okay, it has kind of come to that, but it's done with such care and grace, and it's emotionally effective, and it's rooted in a reality for the most part. I still think with Creed and Balboa, the opponents are treated with a little bit of like a Drago sort of, you know, dark music, and they're like bad guys. But with this movie, it's just, it's adds to the Rocky mythology or legend or whatever you would want to call it, but manages to exist within it in a satisfying way where it's almost like a retelling of Rocky, the first Rocky, but it's still fresh. And, you know, Rocky's now taking the role of Mick, and Adonis is in the role of Rocky, but there's all these elements that make it fresh. It just is a very enjoyable, fun, emotional, satisfying watch.
Well, I mean, let's not forget too, like Rocky V was kind of this situation too, but it didn't.
Yeah, but Rocky was never depressed. He was almost happier because the weight was off of his shoulders. Didn't have to. It was more that like his kid was like, oh, we're not in the fucking mansion with the robot anymore. But Rocky was like, yeah, I'm back in the neighborhood, you know.
But I just mean in terms of, you know, Rocky isn't the one fighting in this movie. And right. I mean, that was something that was kind of criticized about Rocky V. And I think a lot of people thought
only because Tommy Gunn was the one he was training.
Exactly.
Who was the worst.
Right. So,
rest in peace, of course, but the worst.
But I mean, it just goes to show that you can take that concept, and if you do it with class, you do it with care, and everybody, you know, puts in great performances, then it works.
And this is the first Rocky film not written by Stallone.
Right.
But it still feels like a Rocky film. And, you know, of course, Stallone as Rocky will always be Rocky. And I'm sure he had, played a role in shaping that character in this film. But
yeah, for sure. The way he slips back into that character, it's so effortless, and how he's evolved it to the old man version, even older man version of that character. Like the stuff he says is exactly the stuff that, you know, now my dad would say, or my grandfather. It's just, he is the perfect old version of Rocky now. It's not even a caricature. Everything he does, I believe that is the character of Rocky.
And you watch it and you think, yeah, Stallone's old. He can't do this anymore. He can't box anymore. But that kind of shows how great his performance is as well, because he's not incapable of physical activity. I mean, look at him in the Expendables. He's still ripped. Mm. He's still an action guy. But in this movie, he's having trouble. You know, he's mostly in a chair, and when he is active, you can sense that he's old and he's not capable of doing what he used to be able to do. But it's all performance, and I would say out of all of the films, except maybe the first one, I would say this is on par with the first one in terms of his performance.
And I would say, except for the first one, this is the best in the franchise.
Yeah,
for me, it is. It's just interesting from the sense that it's rebranding it. this we got to get into this. We got remakes, reboots. Is this a continuation or a rebrand?
Well, I think we should talk spoiler.
I think spoilers. So too, because mm-hmm. I think one of the best things about the movie
is how it ends up.
Well, I don't even know about that, but just a choice. I think they could have made really easy manipulative choices for the movie.
I think we're talking about the same
okay. thing. And I think what they
tune into the spoilers to see if me and Frank are talking about the same thing.
I think what they end up doing is works perfectly. And like to have an old two similar stories intercut and happening at the same time and feeding off each other is perfect. I like the idea of we should talk about Michael B. Jordan a bit because I think he is very good in the movie. And I think just the fact that he's not in the same situation as Rocky, he's got his own demons and backstory, being privileged in a way, but not real. Like, he still has a rough background before that. It's an interesting situation to look at. And I think the movie does look at it in an interesting way. And I don't know. I've never seen that backstory in a boxing movie before, especially where it's the main character. I can think of secondary characters that are, you know, rich pretty boys that, you know, didn't come up on the streets like most boxers did. But those elements of that character are interesting, and he's not totally that either. He's a mix of two worlds, and obviously abandonment stuff going on there, and he is fighting for something. I don't even think he's sure. You're seeing him come to grips with what he's fighting about or what's driving him in the film. And I think all of that is done really well. All the performances, even the supporting ones, are all great. I don't know who plays his love interest in the film.
Tessa Thompson, I believe her name is.
Yeah, I thought she was good too. And that love story it's certainly not the focus of the movie by any means, but it's there. And what's happening within it is not necessarily obvious stuff.
It reminded me a little bit of the love story in Whiplash, but I know a lot of people complained about that love story just kind of went away and didn't really feed into the main plot of Whiplash. And I felt like this was more fleshed out and more interesting. She gave some balance to his relationship.
I don't know if it's that fleshed out, though. I think it just kind of plays out realistically in the situation that he's in the movie and that she's in the movie. And it's just another aspect to his goal or the journey of getting there. And I bet if you added up screen time dedicated to their relationship, I don't know if it would be much more than Whiplash is.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's...
But it's just, it's all effective, and it just adds to the story, if anything.
Yeah, I mean, I really liked it as well. I mean, I think it is definitely better than Rocky Balboa. I don't know. I feel like there was, when Rocky Balboa came out, it was, people liked it, but I feel like there was still sort of this, oh, he's coming back again. You know, he's you know, why do we need another Rocky movie? Like, there was a lot of kind of reluctance to embrace it, but this one, for some reason, just kind of strikes the right balance, I think, because it's not just about Rocky, and it is really, it's somebody that's there, that there's ties to the past in the Rocky franchise, and that's important. But it really is their relationship and working through that. And I mean, I think that's definitely the strength of the movie. There's not even that, maybe this kind of goes without saying, but I feel like there's not that much boxing, not actual matches in the movie. It's mostly just...
Well, it's about the same amount as the first Rocky and Rocky Balboa.
Right.
It is the most similar in story to Rocky One, with mm-hmm. the extra... Well, maybe it's not that different from Mickey's story in a lot of ways. It goes different directions, but maybe not just in Rocky One, but the Rocky series. The other thing I think it does amazing is referencing, homaging, reappropriating the iconic things from Rocky in new ways, like the street running, the steps, its new twist on the steps. It takes all these classic things from the first Rocky and puts a new spin on it with this character that is cinematically unique and interesting and not a wink, wink, eye rolling moment. It just, it flows with the movie, even though you're aware this is this movie's version of that sequence. It's from different perspectives. I love the use of the use of the original score, and it's used in a lot of different ways. Some very classic, like just piano and melody from the original score, and then some mixed in with hip hop and other aspects. I thought the music was really good too.
Yeah, I thought they were the music was really well done, because it was subtle. Like, there was a connection to the previous Rocky films. It felt familiar, but it wasn't relying on that stuff to, you know, make you, oh yeah, I'm seeing a Rocky movie. So, and then it kind of went its own way. And at the same time, it wasn't something like Southpaw where they're like, you know, throwing hip hop in your face and trying to make it like super modern and contemporary. Like, it was a good mix of everything. And even the fact that they had like his love interest, that she is a musician, that kind of gives you a more organic reason to have some of that music in there. I thought all that stuff was really well done. And to get back to, you were saying about how, like, his backstory, Donnie's backstory, like, it's interesting how they managed to, he is kind of an underdog, but at the same time, you know, he's not coming from poverty exactly. And I just thought that it was, yeah, it was a really interesting balance, and it wasn't, you know, they never really came right out and said, like, why he is pursuing fighting, you know? Like, he never had to give some big speech to anybody about why he's doing it, really. It was just a given. Like, it's in his blood. It's something he feels compelled to do, and he's good at it, so he's going for it. And I thought that was great. That was refreshing. So, yeah, I mean, it's interesting how, I don't know, like, the movie, to me, I feel like even when the movie was announced, again, there was sort of a cynicism about it, but it's clearly coming from, you know, Ryan Coogler, the writer-director. He clearly, I read an interview with him, he loves the Rocky franchise, and, you know, it was something that he bonded with his father over. So, like, you can tell that it's something he didn't want to just, you know, it's not a cash grab studio idea where it's just like, oh, we have Rocky, what can we do with Rocky? Like, they had to convince Stallone to be involved in this. And I almost feel like the whole opening sections of the film, him convincing Rocky to train him, almost seems like it parallels a bit what they had to do to get him to come on board with this movie.
If I was going to say any weakness with the film, it would be the main villain. And mm-hmm. I don't think he's bad necessarily. I'm still a little unclear. Did they say why he was going to jail?
He was caught with a gun.
Okay.
Just got mixed up with a bad crowd.
Yeah, I just feel like that character, again, that's adding to this weird ultra-villainous aspect to it that I don't know if it even needs to be there, really. The hype before their fight and things like that. I don't think that's spoiler. Like, when you see the clips of this guy at the beginning of the movie, I assume that's where we're going to end up.
Right.
Jay, how did you feel about, like, using HBO Sports as actual footage?
Well, they did the same thing in Balboa. I liked it.
The 24/7, man, that was...
They cut in and out of it quite a bit. So I thought, now, in our review of Spectre, the 007 movie, mm-hmm. we talked about the single take shot of James Spectre going up on the roof and walking, and how it was like everybody's doing these single take shocks and shockers. And what did that give us? What did it, you know, it seems just kind of self-indulgent and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, I can't wait to see how he says it's not in Rocky or Creed, pardon me.
That it's not self-indulgent?
Yeah, what's the difference?
Because you're seeing a round of boxing. You're seeing an entire match play out in one shot. Yeah, in the ring with the people fighting.
Okay, I liked it. I liked it in Spectre too, but I don't know why one's self-indulgent and one...
Because what does it serve in Spectre?
don't know. They're putting their dick on the table. Look what we can do. I think it's
But this is an actual. It serves the story. You're in the ring with Creed in his first fight for the extent of the fight.
I think there's cuts.
There is not.
Sure.
Positive.
Okay.
Now, is it? But is it? Was it actually shot that way, or is it just made to look seamless?
Well, I mean, Children of Men is made to look seamless.
Right.
I
mean,
I thought there was
when it goes down to Rocky yelling from the side of the ring, I'm sure there's a cut in there somewhere, but I mean, I don't think that matters.
Right.
What?
No.
There's two single take,
yes,
quote unquote, moments, one in the ring and one approaching a ring. The one approaching a ring clearly has a cut in it, but still, I don't think that necessarily
matters.
I just
don't know. I'm not. I thought I had heard on a podcast that like half of that was single take, and then
half of what? Which one?
The fight.
It's all from the beginning to the last round. It's one take.
Okay.
Or presented as one take.
Yeah, maybe that's just the difference. You heard somebody saying how
it
was actually
shot. I don't,
but
honestly, I don't pick up on that stuff as much.
I don't care if
I don't even.
I don't care if they hide cuts in it.
Yeah,
it's
all about the effect that as you're watching it. But something else, like with the fight choreography.
And sorry, the choreography of that fight, like to be able to do that single take, not only are they doing a single take, but it's like medium close-ups of the fighters and very tight framing and people kind of falling out of frame and then moving into a close-up and then shifting over to the other person and following a punch and then going down to Rocky at the side of the ring and then following Creed back to the corner and then back out of the corner. And it's a very complicated.
But what makes it less self-indulgent than Spectre other than
because
degree of difficulty?
It's served by the story.
Why? How?
Because you're watching a guy in his first fight in real time in the ring with him.
So how does that serve the story better than telling that with cuts?
Because you're experiencing it. You're experiencing it as is.
Okay.
I mean, I think it adds to the intensity of the experience. I think Spectre, that
just like walking
was part
out
of the
intention to the ring,
too, but
you're following him to the ring.
Well,
it's building attention.
Then why aren't you following James Spectre from his perspective at the beginning of Spectre?
You are, but you don't know where he's going. You don't know what's happening. You're watching him walk along a roof.
He doesn't know either. He's in the shit.
Well, he apparently knows. I mean, I would like to think he knows.
He's there for a reason, but, you know.
I mean, I like an inspector, too, but I...
So do I. I just don't know why one
what,
is...
What do you like about it?
I don't know.
Other than it's a single take, what
exactly
do you like about it?
And I don't... Let me put it this way. I'm less perceptive to things like that than you guys.
Okay, then your opinion doesn't matter.
I'm not watching every shot of a movie wondering where the cuts are and stuff like that. Sometimes I'm not even aware of it.
I mean,
to the same degree you guys are. But this one I was, because I had heard about it prior to seeing the movie, and it was seemed to be a point of conversation about this film that I heard for whatever reason.
Right.
It's motivated.
As Spectre goes, it's just for me. There's a mystery there of like, why are we watching him for this long? Like, where is he going? It pulls you in. You don't usually get to see Bond just walk for that long in a movie.
Yeah, and then he gets to the end of the roof and it cuts.
Yeah, I know. In terms of it being something for the spectacle of it, I would have thought they would have continued into the action with it, but still interesting.
I'm not saying, you know, you can use a cut, but the it just feels like that's always a thing now. It's like, oh, single take in that thing?
No, I
Daredevil
agree.
Single take fight.
True Detective,
whatever else. This is a great use of the single take, because you're watching Creed go into his first match and you think, okay, Rocky's done boxing over and over and over again. How are we going to change this up? We're going to be in the ring with Creed for the extent of the entire match, and we're going to be right with him. It's not going to be a long shot. It's not going to be a wide from the side of the ring. We're going to be right essentially on his shoulder throughout the extent of this fight.
to me,
and in the ring or in the what do you call that? The corner.
Yeah.
And hearing their conversations and
like to me, what's also interesting about it is like I feel it was drawing from video games as well. Like I feel like you know you look at each Rocky movie and it's kind of like okay, how can we bring this to you know what's happening today? And like when Rocky Balboa came out, it was all about presenting the fight as you know an HBO special, as we discussed. And I think you know I don't like. Maybe some people would take that in a negative way, but I just think I think it was kind of subtle, but I think it's there in terms of, you know, you're kind of hovering behind him, kind of just over his shoulder as he's fighting and stuff like that. And I thought it worked quite well. They don't use it for every fight and that's fine. I mean, but I think, you know, there's something about like even, the earlier Rocky movies where it's more pulled back and you're just watching two people just slug it out with each other. And there's a bit of that in this movie, but I think there's a lot of extreme close-ups in this film, especially during, I would say there's a middle section of the film where Donnie's kind of emotionally, you know, there's inner turmoil going on and the camera's just like following him like really close throughout that whole section of the film, which is something that, what was that movie at TIFF?
Land Before Time.
No. James White, I think it was called. The one with the guy from Girls that I watched.
Well, Blue is the Warmest Color does that to an insane level. Yes.
Interesting.
I would say better than Creed.
Hmm. But yeah, I mean, so I think there's some interesting modern elements to it that keeps it fresh. If you want to talk self-indulgent, to me, the most self-indulgent scene in the movie, which is still awesome, is the whole BMX running scene, which to me, like there's a moment there where you're watching it and you're thinking if the music wasn't playing,
yeah, I agree.
This would be ridiculous.
Especially when he's standing there for about 2 minutes.
And he's just like punching.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to do it. If someone walked across that on the street,
yeah.
Like, what is going on?
It would be like, why is that kid angrily yelling at that old man in the window?
But it is awesome.
But that sequence is amazing.
Yeah. That was the money shot of the movie for me. And I mean,
well, I think one of my favorites is, excuse me, the very end.
Yeah.
Like the last sequence.
That was pretty good too. Do we know if it was actually the same people from the 12 O'Clock Boys that they used for this?
I doubt it.
Does 12 O'Clock Boys, is it in Philadelphia? That's what I didn't think it was.
It's in Baltimore.
Baltimore, yeah.
But, I mean, they're not that far apart. I don't know if that stuff has spread to Philadelphia by now or if they just brought them over. I'm not sure, but it was pretty cool. Nice little touch, nice little, you know, again, a different way of showing the communities behind him and stuff like that, so.
Yeah.
Someone
has to open an Adrian's restaurant in Philadelphia.
That's a good idea. I was going to mention...
I love that sort of like, you know, people getting their pictures taken in front of the Rocky statue and the fact that that's actually a real statue there.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. Picture. Was that in any of the other movies? Was that in Rocky Balboa?
The statue?
The statue.
It's in I think it starts in 3.
Oh, okay. Because I feel like we had discussed that before, but that is a pretty interesting just how... Because it really does feel like, you know, they're going around
like
town.
Rocky is a real person from Philadelphia.
Yeah. I feel like there could be people out there who would think that is the case, that would be confused about that, which is kind of cool.
Well, the one thing we haven't talked about too much is the emotional core of the movie, because it does... veer into spoiler territory, but to me that's where the movie really hits, is like every emotional beat it goes for works. And I
cried.
Yeah.
What?
I was close.
Well, not like
I welled up. I don't know, I'm trying to think of a tear actually.
I had
dropped.
A drop.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well,
I mean,
if anything,
a few different drops, if you know what I mean.
Now, one thing
I had a drip and a drop.
I knew this guy was gonna come hard. I mean, sorry, not that come hard. Like, just bring it for Rocky when he was projecting YouTube clips on his wall and imitating him. I just picture Jay putting a cringeworthy compilation up there.
Yeah.
imitating reenacting the hot sauce versus.
No, I would be. I'd be projecting a clip of a brony shopping at Walmart, and I'd be like grabbing My Little Ponies off the wall and looking at the price.
At that point, my question was, well, is this a 6 or a 5 for Jay?
I was asking the same question. We'll find out soon enough. One thing we do have to address before we get to spoilers.
Oh.
I know what you're going to say.
Do you?
Does it involve text?
Text.
Oh, okay. It's not. I thought you were going to ask Frank what he thought of the stats of the boxers.
Oh, well, that's a good question. Yeah.
I don't know why it needed to be in there, to be honest.
It's inconsistent, though.
Yeah, who it shows and at what when point it shows.
I thought it was weird to have the best pound-for-pound boxer in the world. I don't think that's an actual stat. I think that's subjective.
Is it?
Yeah, I don't think you could look up, hey, who's the best pound-for-pound boxer today?
Let me Google that.
You could find probably people's different opinions on who the best pound-for-pound boxer is, but it's not a real title or...
Pound for pound ratings by Ring Magazine.
That's their own
ESPN's
opinion.
Pound for pound rankings.
Maybe it does exist.
I mean, I assume it's just a way of having people from different weight categories compared in some way.
Not what Frank meant. What he meant is that it does exist. Right, Frank?
Oh, no. You can edit that. Can I edit this?
Sure, yeah.
No, maybe Sean should edit it.
What was the other? Oh, it seemed kind of odd that his first 4 fights are against the top, I think, 4, 5, or 6 fighters in the world, besides the eventual one. Like, it was all literally the best in their category, and 4th, 2nd, and 1st pound-for-pound boxers in the world. Seems kind of weird that you would hit all of those right away as your first boxing matches.
Yeah, no, that is true.
What were you going to say, though?
I was going to say the humor. I mean, you've got an iCloud joke in there. You've got a few little things like that.
It wasn't that bad for me because Stallone, just the way the character does it, it's believable. But I actually thought it would have been funnier if Stallone like came back at him and said, like, he knows what the cloud is. He's like, I might be old, but, you know.
That's true.
But I don't think Rocky would.
Probably wouldn't know, but
exactly. But it wasn't that bad. Like,
I thought it was fine.
I literally thought everything Rocky said was hilarious, and I'm not talking about the emotional stuff. Like, just when he's being that character and saying, "Oh, you know, my back, it's not so good anymore." Like, everything he says is.
Well, that's why Rocky is great, because he's just a charming character. And that's, again, why the franchise is interesting, because he loses that for some time. He becomes a little more sophisticated, or in his wealth, they try to make him seem a little more... They always still play like the, oh, you know, my kid's smarter than me. He knows how to work a video camera, blah, 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 blah.
They try to make him Oscar.
Yeah.
He's not Oscar.
You lose a little bit of that humor, I think, in favor of him becoming an action hero. But they bring it back. They really bring it back with Rocky V to a degree. But then Balboa and this really, it's like the Rocky from the first film again, and a bit of the second, I guess.
How did you guys feel about when he wakes him up in the morning and he's like doing the dance in his room?
Was that a desperate attempt at a meme?
Going viral?
Yeah. Is it a Drake marketing scheme?
I'm trying to remember what the dance was.
You don't remember?
No.
You don't remember him dancing?
You know the scene I'm talking about, though.
Yeah, the first training.
Well, like when he's at his house and then he wakes up to the music.
Yeah, yeah. The first training day.
Okay.
Yeah,
where they wake up at 5.
Sorry, Sean, you don't remember the first training day?
Well, he was training all through the movie. I mean,
That was the first real training day.
Okay.
Anyway, yeah, I remember him dancing. I don't have weird eye rolling.
He's kind of dancing like a juggalo.
But he's playing like a Motown song or something, isn't he? Yeah. It's not like he's trying to be cool. And
no.
He's Rocky.
Yeah.
He's just being playful. He's probably excited.
Oh, yeah.
Totally fit with the character.
I loved it.
Don't try to get me going. Try to start shit.
It's my job. It's my job.
The direction was great.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would say cinematically, it's great. There's nothing that elevates it. Like, it kind of remains at the level that it requires. There are a few moments, like the controversial single take boxing match that everyone has a problem with.
I don't have a problem with it. I wanted to clarify. I didn't have a problem with it in Spectre either. I just wanted to.
I don't have a problem with it. Have you explained why one is great and one is
because self-indulgent?
I understand the motivation of one, and I don't understand the motivation of the other. Simple as that. The direction is, it's not overly flashy, but it still has great little stylistic flourishes.
I'll tell you what I liked. I think, Frank, this may have been up your alley, but when the Creed titles come up and there's that, just the rise in the music and the score, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Didn't register a thing.
What? Oh, man.
I imagine now, because that's probably what, like a 8-second shot of a title with music going, and Frank says it didn't register. So what do you think's happening when that's on the screen with Frank? Like, picture Frank sitting in front of the screen.
I can tell you what's happening.
Eight seconds of that title coming up.
Popcorn.
Music coming up. And Frank's just like zoned out. Nothing is registering. He's just eating popcorn. And then he somehow kicks back in at some point. He's like, oh, I'm back to registering now.
Well, all I was saying by registering is I don't remember that being a moment for me in the film.
It's just the letters are so big.
It's not really a moment for me either. But
boom. It's just there.
Fuck.
But I did notice it because I saw this at the Penn Center and I was like, oh, presentation isn't bad. I must admit they've started, I saw Night Before and this there, and they actually mat the screen to the aspect ratio, which nobody seems to do anymore. And it's so much better.
Mm-hmm. I saw a Good Dinosaur at the Seaway. No picture matting.
None?
No.
Garbage.
Yeah, it's a good dinosaur.
And but when that, unfortunately, in the theater I was in, whenever there was a low rumble, you heard that, like, blown-out speaker.
Oh. Or the rattle, just the mechanical rattle. That's what I get at the Pen. It's brutal. And the worst is when you're getting it from the theater beside you.
Yeah.
Bullshit.
All right, well.
Oh, one other thing. The way they handle the name change and him fighting between the two and how they use it in the last fight, loved everything about it.
We haven't mentioned Felicia Rashad.
I liked her a lot.
She was good.
Yeah, I liked her too. The one moment that was a little weird for me was at the concert. It kind of goes up to 11 and the only frame of reference you have for that is the very first scene in the movie, I think.
Goes up to 11? What do you mean?
Well, he...
like what he does?
Yeah, he gets pretty aggressive.
Oh.
And you haven't really seen that side of the character since...
No,
what is a flashback at the beginning of the movie?
Yeah, it didn't bother me. It
didn't bother me that much. It just... I don't know if I totally believe it for the character at that point.
Kind of makes sense to me.
Going through some shit, man.
I guess they do qualify that with the scene right after. I don't know. It seemed like a very written, catalytic moment.
Didn't register for me, I guess.
Yeah,
you could say.
DFDS?
It is not drama for drama's sake, but...
okay. Is that it before we get to spoilers?
That's it for me.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I just like the idea of a movie where it's obviously partially about legacy, and creating your own legacy and a personal history, and how these, I guess these fighters are driven to fight for reasons that they're not entirely sure about, and the wake that's left in that pursuit. So you have Felicia Rashad, who is lost her husband and is now dealing with D going out and becoming a fighter and thinking, okay, now she has to go through this again and watch him. Who knows what happens? What, you know, he's going down this similar path. And then with Rocky, he went down this path, and then, you know, he has to deal with the things he's dealing with, and he's got family. Some have are just gone away. Some are passed on, and, you know, his choice of career affected everyone. And then the girlfriend who is trying to create this legacy while she still can, and seemingly working constantly to try to just leave something behind after she loses something.
Well, even the villain boxer that comes up, where you know,
he needs that last fight to leave his own legacy as well.
But it's also like his manager says, "I don't give a fuck about your legacy. I want you to have money for your kids." And it's like this kind of balance of, well, what do you value more?
And then that, you know, you see the relationship between Creed and his girlfriend, and it's like, okay, well, now she's going to be the one dealing with someone who, potentially dealing with someone who's pursuing this life. It's great.
Yeah. And I mean, in terms of Michael B. Jordan's performance and stuff, and some of that section of the film you're talking about, Frank, I thought it was like the scene in the jail, I thought was really well handled, well, both in terms of the performances and the script. I thought, just, you know, not, it didn't quite play out the way you'd expect it to. Nothing was cliched. It just felt...
Well, I thought both characters held their own pretty well in that scene.
Yeah.
Like, they both had what they pretty much say. I'm going to say what I'm going to say, and I'm going to get out. And they hash it out, so to speak, but not completely. It's left hanging a bit at that point. And yeah. I one thing that we haven't said, which I think is there, like, they form a bond, a believable bond between these two characters out of nowhere, essentially, right? Like, he just shows up and bugs him, and the bond they form within an hour and a half is pretty real, and it's not cheesy either, I don't think.
Yeah.
That's not easy to do.
I do wonder how this movie plays to somebody who hasn't seen any of the Rocky movies. I mean, I think
it would play pretty good.
I think, yeah, I mean, the story is pretty self-contained and works on its own, but I do think some of those emotional things would not quite be there if you don't have a history with Rocky and stuff.
I feel like there was another character.
Another character?
Was pivotal in the movie. Maybe not.
Not too many. I mean, it is kind of weird to me that he doesn't really have any friends. I mean, I don't know if that's intentional or not. It's just, you know, he picks up and moves to another city and has nobody, essentially.
Cemetery scene's really good.
Yeah. I don't know, is it a spoiler to discuss Paulie's fate in the film?
Was he in Rocky Balboa?
Good question. I think he was. But, I mean, I know some people felt like it was, I don't know, not the right choice to go with, or I don't know, somehow they felt wrong about that aspect of it. But
was Paulie in Rocky Balboa?
Yeah, he's in it.
Okay, didn't register.
But I was just saying, how do you guys feel about Paulie's fate in the film? And,
well, what's his fate in real life?
He's still alive, isn't he?
I think so.
Well, now I'm pissed.
Yeah,
I didn't even know.
Yeah, he is.
I think it's you have to kind of have that.
Yeah, he's obviously taking his room in the movie. Like, it's
yeah,
it's filling, like Jay said, all these
Rocky
things
has
left
to
his life. He's
be where it goes, Rocky has to essentially have nothing. Everything is gone.
Right.
Until this comes into his life, and now he has to reevaluate certain choices.
Yeah. Makes sense. And, well, there's something else, but we'll probably talk about that in the spoilers.
Would his turtles be the same turtles or replacement turtles?
Replacement turtles.
Interesting.
That was pretty... I really liked the touch of the sex scene and then panning up to the turtle. That was pretty sweet.
Symbolic.
Yeah. Oh, what a...
Someone was turtle-heading during the sex scene.
What about... what? We talked about Spectres. Skyfall's in the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I was wondering about that. I mean, it's an MGM...
Well, it's basically movie. Like, okay, we need to pull something from our library to put on the TV.
Yeah, I don't know if that's why, but... You'd think that there would be something more significant, but maybe they're just like, well, yeah, this is the movie.
That's
they would
kind
pick.
Of, you know, like you would expect, like Frank has complained before, like they'd be watching some 1950s noir film or something. It's like, really? They're watching that?
No,
they'd be watching Skyfall.
But this is the thing. They wouldn't have fallen asleep to Skyfall. Don't buy that. All right. So should we give some star ratings?
I'm going to go 5.
Ooh.
I'm also going late 5.
I'm going heavy 5. Heavyweight 5. You're going lightweight 5?
Lightweight 5.
I'm going...
Pound for pound 5?
Welterweight 5? I don't know. I mean, it was a solid 5 to me. And,
This could... I mean, the 6th thing... Sometimes I regret even creating this monster. But this could be a 6. The only reason it's not is because... You know, with Mad Max, it's not like I necessarily think Mad Max is a better film than Creed. It's just
I do.
What it does, it brought so much to the table. Mm-hmm. And it elevated things cinematically. Creed is just doing what it said, what it intended to do extremely well. It's extremely satisfying. I feel like I could watch Creed over and over and over again. Same with Mad Max, but...
I will say that. We didn't mention it. It is pretty long.
It did not feel long to me.
It felt... I was feeling it a bit towards the end, but not in any way that I was like...
What is the actual runtime on
2
this?
2 hours, 12 minutes. But I...
Which Cinema Clock listed as 1 hour and 12 minutes.
Yeah, it plays pretty good for a movie that long.
Mm-hmm.
And interesting you say Mad Max, because it is interesting that they're both evolving a franchise and mm-hmm. taking it to new levels and... Doing something different with it. They're interesting.
I read an article comparing those two specifically.
Really?
And I mean, yeah, it's, but I mean, there's tons of other sequel reboots, whatever they are, that fail. I don't, and I mean, Mad Max, in one case, it's the original director coming back.
Well, I'm sure they would make the comparison that in this one, it's like Furiosa almost replacing Mad Max or being the star the same way that Rocky.
Sure.
Is kind of taking...
But the amazing thing with Creed is that this is written and directed by someone new.
Right.
And someone fairly young. And for a franchise that has been handled by Stallone, outside of the first one being not being directed by Stallone, but still written, and then someone stepping in and taking over and feeling like there's not a missed beat there is pretty amazing.
To me, the key thing about those two, that why they work, is it's not coming from, you know, somebody in the marketing department saying, oh, this franchise, people are dying for a sequel, how can we make something? Like, it's coming from people who love it and have an idea to further it and take it to another level. And to me, that's...
I wouldn't say the marketing department had nothing to do with this. I'm sure they were happy about it when they brought it to revitalize any franchise that is popular.
Sure.
I mean, reboot, remake, rebrand. Do we have an official name for Creed? We've dodged the question. What is it?
Sequel.
Sequel.
Maybe.
I think it's our first ever rebranding.
Rebranding?
Well, the next movie will be called Creed 2.
Yeah. That's never happened before?
I don't know. Has it? You tell me. I don't think so.
Pretty sure it has. It has to have happened before. Somewhere.
Hannibal?
Essentially, it's a spinoff that turns into its own thing. So, that's happened before.
But I was surprised that, yes, it's called Creed, and it's mainly about Creed. But I would say Rocky, it's 50-50.
Yeah, when it was first announced, I thought Rocky's going to have one scene or something.
If they called this Rocky 7 or whatever they call it, it would work.
Yeah.
They just might not. They might introduce Rocky a little sooner, but.
But they wanted to rebrand it.
But I know what you mean in that these are seemingly spawned by the creators or someone who appreciates the series wanting to add to it.
It
ends up being marketed, but it's like Creed and Mad Max. Well, what are some examples of sequels that are, it's, you know, like the new Texas Chainsaw Massacre movies or Nightmare on Elm Street, where you're just, the trend is horror remakes. And it's like the difference of that's like having sex to have a baby. Creed and Mad Max are just fucking because it feels good.
But those are reboots, like clearly reboots. They don't.
Yeah, but nothing is demanding those other than just.
What about Jurassic product. World?
This does not have Rocky in the title. You understand that? They're replacing the name with Rocky with a new name, Creed.
Prometheus.
That might work. I feel like that is.
It would have been, except now he's going back to
Aliens. Yeah, he pushed out, which is. did we talk about that? Like, that's embarrassing. I think we did talk about that.
Yeah, we did. Definitely
did. That's gross. That's gross. But yeah, I just can't think of another case.
You can't call it Prometheus, too.
No, you have to come up with another cool name like Prometheus. Like, call it Covenant. Just call it Covenant. Not Alien Covenant.
Marketing department would not like that.
Anyway, I'm open all ears for something comparable in franchise history.
I'll give it some thought. Or I'll just wait for listeners.
I can't believe you weren't prepared for this.
I don't know. Sorry about that.
It feels like this is the first point of attack. What is Sean going to call? Well, keep going. We'll bring it up in spoiler. When these news stories came up, let's see what you labeled it as. I should have looked this up.
Well, I've always called it a spinoff.
Okay.
But, I mean, as I've said, it could be multiple things because it could be a reboot. There probably will be sequels to it. But it is a sequel because it's chronologically continuing with the same characters. So, all of the above. Stay tuned to the end of the show for our spoiler discussion about Creed. So, let's get to a little bit of news. We got a big, big, huge, huge trailer to discuss. People were just losing their shit on the internet over this one. Captain America Civil War. Which is the, is it the only Marvel movie coming out next year?
I doubt it.
I think there might be.
Doctor Strange, no?
Is it next year? Maybe you're right. Sounds right.
Assuming this is May and Doctor Strange is July or August?
I will tell you in one second here.
See if my,
Frank.
My movie executive hat still fits.
Yes, you're right. November, Doctor Strange.
It's filling the Thor slot.
Yeah.
Thor the Dark World.
So, I mean, I guess interesting in the sense that it kind of feels like this is another Avengers movie, even though it's not. Like, it feels like there's going to be a lot of people in this movie. Although apparently, you know, the trailer opens with, you know, Captain America, Falcon, and Bucky. Our boy Bucky, which I guess was intentional because that really is the focus of the movie. It is a Captain America movie.
It
is a follow-up to Winter Soldier, but they're also shoehorning in this big story from the comics, which brings in the entire Marvel universe. And you know what? Like I liked Winter Soldier a lot, and I watched this trailer, and I think it kind of has the same tone in a sense, and I'm game for a follow-up to that. But then you get to the actual, like, the big conflict between specifically Captain America and Iron Man. Something about it in the trailer didn't, just felt weird to me. Like, you know, there's a shot at the end where, like, you know, people love seeing, you know, comic book fans are love talking about which superhero would win in a fight and all this kind of stuff, right? And it seemed like people were so excited that there's this fight going on between Captain America, Falcon, and Iron Man. To me, something about it just seemed bizarre that Captain America and Falcon are like pummeling Iron Man. Like, it just did not feel right for their characters. It just felt strange.
Yeah, I mean, to get to the point where they're that at odds, where they're nearly killing someone, they don't beat up a bad guy that heavily.
Yeah, it's true.
Like, do they ever, you know, does Iron Man ever just stand there and pummel? Would he have done that to Jeff Bridges in the first Iron Man? Would that have been acceptable?
I've only seen him take his aggression out on punching bags. He goes through a lot of those.
That's true.
Well, that's Captain America.
You said Captain America.
He said Iron Man.
I said Iron Man.
But it's Captain America that is the one that's pounding.
No, they're pounding Captain America.
Really?
I think Captain America and Falcon are pounding Iron Man.
That's what he said.
Oh, are they?
That's what I believe so. Yeah.
Okay, well, either way, no superhero pounds a bad guy that viciously, let alone another member of your team. That motivation is obviously inspired by fan service.
Yeah.
I just thought it looked kind of ugly. Very.
I agree with you.
like gray looking.
Yeah.
What genre are they saying this is a shoot off of?
This is a classic revenge flick, can't you?
I mean, I think they are going for
rape revenge.
I think they are going for a continuation of Winter Soldier, so that probably explains the grays and whatnot. But I mean, interesting thing with the Civil War storyline too. Like, I was talking to our good buddy Wintle, and he brought up an interesting point, which is that, you know, in the comics, Civil War, the whole superhero registration thing comes about. Got a little ladybug there. Because, like, a superhero accidentally blows up a town, essentially. Like, somebody who just has these crazy powers can just blow up a town accidentally or on purpose, and they want to control that. And then you think about the Avengers, and it's like, how many of them have that kind of power? None of them, really. Like, most of them are just people in suits. Like, it seems odd that the characters that we know in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, it doesn't seem like that really makes sense for what's going on in the plot. But, you know, then that's kind of why they're pushing this whole thing with Bucky being the reason for it. And I don't know how I feel about that, because I think he was one of the weaker parts of the Winter Soldier. And I don't know if that's going
to
be...
There was a meeting where they were like, can we change the name Bucky? Do we have to stick to that name?
Probably. They were probably overruled. But, yeah, I mean...
Can you imagine, like, the fans would go apeshit if they changed the name Bucky, right? But can you imagine if his actual, in reality, his name, that name, character's name was like, what's a cool name? Frank. Frank?
Frank's pretty cool.
And then they were like, let's change the name to Bucky. The fans would be like, what the fuck? Why are you changing this hero's name to Bucky? That's the lamest name ever.
I mean, to be fair, it's a name from, you know, a certain era that...
I do not care.
I think it makes sense for that era, but...
Does it, though?
Bucky sounds like something from World War II.
Why do you think that's a popular name?
How many
from the 40s?
Google how many people were named Bucky in the 40s.
Okay.
I don't think there was that many. I've never met a Bucky. You met a Bucky?
No.
Or a Buck even?
No.
When you say Buck, what are the first three things that come to mind? I've only got two.
Dollar bill. Three.
I'm thinking Buck, the dog from Married with Children.
Bucky O'Hare, the comic.
And Uncle Buck.
Yeah.
Well, they got a list of the top names of the 1940s. It's the top 200, and Bucky is not on it.
Well, what is Bucky short for? Buck?
Buckminster?
That is a good question, too. I do not know.
Yeah, might be Buckminster.
Really?
Is it Buckley?
Maybe. Means male deer. Believe it or not.
I know what a buck is.
I know.
Did you Google what is Bucky short for?
Or Buck. What is Buck short for?
I looked up name origin. Bucky.
Buck.
Now, what is it short for?
Modern English variant of the English and German name Buck. Not much else to say there.
Wow.
Great name, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
John Candy is Buck Russell.
So anyway, I guess that's all we have to say about that. So anything else you guys watched this week that you want to talk about?
I can go first, I guess. I watched a new release, The Good Dinosaur.
How was that?
A Pixar film.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a true Pixar movie? Is this a joint production between Disney and Pixar? Or?
No, it's true Pixar.
Well,
it had some production troubles.
Yeah, I can see that. I get that.
Yeah.
I was not crazy about it. Mostly for me, I did not like the design of the characters at all.
Yeah. Like the humans specifically, or all?
No, the dinosaurs, like the main dinosaur. Oh, and okay. I found most of the voice performances to be not that great. And in particular, the lead is very annoying. He just screams the whole time. Like that's part of his story. He's scared of everything. And it's just, that got on my nerves quite a bit. I mean, you get your techgasms, you're loving these photorealistic backgrounds, but you know, you want a story. You want something there to latch onto, something that might make you shed a tear, like Creed, or you know.
Yep.
And that's what I'm counting on Pixar for, story, right?
Yep.
Creativity.
Story is number one.
And, you know, you have this idea that like Pixar will make maybe not obvious choices, but the jokes will be with stereotypes with stuff like what type of dinosaur would a T-Rex be or a pterodactyl. And in this, like the T-Rexes are cowboys, which I don't even know if that makes sense. It's not like that's a pre-existing thing. Like they're the cowboys of the dinosaur
world. Even that feels like Woody mixed with the T-Rex from Toy Story.
Yeah, the pterodactyls are just villains essentially playing into the vultures from the Jungle Book territory. None of the characters fit for me or were like clever takes on what that dinosaur would be, the same way like Finding Nemo like creates characters out of different types of fish or sharks or turtles.
Question. Pixar, when they started, they made these films, they became franchises, even though they didn't depend on or think that they would. But Toy Story, Finding Nemo, Monsters, Inc., definitive Pixar. Have we lost the definitive Pixar? Like, it seems like now they're not even making films that are worthy of creating franchises out of, let alone films like Ratatouille and the, what's the other one? The Incredibles and WALL-E that kind of stood as little singular great films. They're just kind of like shit in the bed, right?
Well, I would kind of.
Well, hey, Inside Out is, I think, great.
You did Black Friday. Like you Black Friday'd Inside Out, so even though it's a piece of shit.
Well, I like Inside Out. I certainly don't think it's
but you have to Pixar's admit Inside Out is at least like closer to the Pixar that we're talking about, like the
I
great
agree,
Pixar
but
then.
It just I guess maybe Pixar are it feels like when they go in that direction, for me, and of course I'm speaking for me.
Of course.
It starts to feel a little like self-parody to a degree. And then when they're not going in that direction, it just feels uninspired, like you're Braves or what sounds like you're lost little dinosaur.
And this film, this picture, this cash grab flick. It has some cool ideas, And they're, at times they're embracing some of the aspects of WALL-E where it's really not a lot of dialogue, some cool visual moments and visual storytelling, which I liked, and just some cool visuals in general, like the pterodactyls. I don't want to spoil it, but you know, there's a cloud up above.
Do they shit on someone?
No, but they're essentially like shark fins, like as a ceiling rather than in the ocean. Hmm. I'm like, that's cool. That's a cool idea. That's a Pixar idea. I'm digging that. But guess what? That just because that 5 seconds registers with me, you're not. That's not giving you a pass for the whole movie, Pixar. You're gonna have to do better than some upside down shark fins if you want an extra.
Are you worried that maybe there is a great film there, just the great moments didn't register?
No, I'm not worried at all.
Okay.
And it's basically the protagonist is, he's not, even rewatching The Lion King, like Simba's a little whiny, even when he becomes an adult.
Mm-hmm.
But it's bearable. For me, this character is beyond that. They're just, I just get sick of it, and I don't even like the design of the character. I actually find the design of the main family of dinosaurs gross. Absolutely gross.
Huh. So what did you give that one out of 5 stars?
2.75 out of 5. And I thought it was, well, maybe a little
no, too... No, but what is that? Is
three,
it a 2.3?
Oh, 3. Even that I feel is a little too generous. But again,
why are you giving it a 3?
Well, you know, that techgasm element is there. Did the couple of the waterfalls and the storm, like the thing at the beginning, like this dirty, muddy tidal wave. I mean, that looks amazing.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Ultimate techgasm.
So stay for the tidal wave and then hit the road.
If you're a fan of mud storms, be sure to see the good dinosaur.
Yes. But the story is just weak. It is weak. No.
Yeah, I heard it was pretty simple and straightforward, and there's not much to it. But
yeah, man, bummer. I will admit this. This is embarrassing, but I will admit it.
Okay.
There was a time when, you know, I was still living at home, was lacking in shelf space, so I decided to do a shelf of DVDs. And then have a separate shelf of like my favorite directors. And I actually had a Pixar section. Like I moved Pixar to that level. I'm like, I'll justify this. It was mostly because.
So Pixar as just the director the is brand. Pixar.
Well, kind of, but it was more, I think I rationalized it because I needed to move a certain amount
right
to the shelf to have enough room on the other one.
I've been there.
But I rationalized that Pixar move to auteur level. And you know what? That just wouldn't happen today.
No, clearly not.
Goodbye, Pixar, from my auteur shelf.
From your autism shelf.
All right, Jay, what do you got for us?
I did a lot of rewatches. I don't know if I necessarily need to discuss them.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I guess all I'll say is because I talked about Star Wars A New Hope last week, rewatched The Empire Strikes Back, which is the sequel to New Hope, Star Wars. I think we discussed it on the premium podcast, but I still love A New Hope, but just the difference in quality between that film and Empire Strikes Back. I think Empire Strikes Back really raises the bar, and that feels more like what I think of when I think of Star Wars than A New Hope. A New Hope is very simplistic. The story is, you know, it's like a Wizard of Oz sort of story, but you know, there's not that much melodrama. It's not a
opera, space opera.
Yeah. Well, what's the story to Empire Strikes Back?
What do you mean?
What's the story? Tell me the story of Empire Strikes Back.
Well, first off, you've got a love story between Han and Leia that ultimately ends in tragedy. Not tragedy, but tragically. You've got the betrayal of Lando Calrissian.
But these would
under
have...
the...
Well, that's not a story.
You've got
that's like
Luke Skywalker trying to discover his place in all of this, training to be a Jedi Master, and Yoda, I guess, trying to decide if he's worthy, and of course, Luke finding out that Vader is his father.
Now, I don't want to come down hard on this, but there is an aspect that without the context of the first movie, these stories would mean nothing.
And, well, of course they would.
Well, that's like, it doesn't stand on its own, I don't think.
Well, I don't think it's intended to stand on its own.
Some of that credit has to be given to the original film.
Of course, it lays the groundwork, but this film takes the characters that in the first film were just archetypes and gives them personality.
I think the same way we've complained about some Harry Potter stuff. If someone went in and just watched Empire Strikes Back, they would have a lot of the same issues.
Yeah, that's your opinion. We had this discussion about Harry Potter last time, and I said it's intended. Don't you think they're intended to be watched as a series?
Okay.
And clearly these are intended to be watched as a series because it's left as a cliffhanger, right?
Yep.
I mean, I would say that's one of the few strikes against Empire Strikes Back is just that there's no closure, but again, it's intended that way. So,
well, that's actually what makes it interesting. Is it ends on a down note?
Right. That's true.
I mean, it ends with everything. The shit has hit the fan, and they are left there to figure out how to pick up the pieces and fix everything. And that's why Jedi is, I guess, more hopeful and cartoony. Because they're picking up all the pieces and making everything better. Whereas Empire is the one that shatters everything in order for Jedi to do that. But even beyond that, the direction is way better than A New Hope. The look of it, the cinematography in Empire, forget within the context of the Star Wars films, just generally, it's a beautiful looking movie. And it looks like a film.
Right.
A New Hope. It's great. But it's... I can't think of any amazing visual moments. I mean,
three
there
moons
are
of Tatooine?
Iconic visual moments, but... Three moons of Tatooine? Sorry, do you want to rephrase that?
Three suns of... No, three moons.
That's even worse.
I don't know.
The two sons. Two sons. You're wrong with the number. And
I've never been...
It didn't register, obviously.
I didn't just watch it last week either.
Well, it is an iconic moment, but...
I think
it's a moment so good. You had to point it out to me, and you didn't even remember what it was.
I was just giving you a frame of reference for the shot, which is a beautiful shot, which you've... discarded to prove your
I
point.
I have not discarded. It is a beautiful
Star Wars
shot.
One looks like television, I think is what you said.
It doesn't look like television, but Empire is just such a step up.
If you're going to use any argument, you'd say, when they make a Star Wars rock and roll poster, which movie do they make it look like?
The original.
It looks like Empire. That's the colors
of
Empire.
They're all wearing the outfits from the original.
Right, but the color, the tone is
That's
Empire.
Because it's a rock stage.
Well, and they're obviously
What color
Empire.
Would they make it?
That beautiful Empire Strikes Back color palette.
I agree. That is the color palette of the Cloud City in Empire Strikes Back. But that's because it's a rock stage. Like,
well, there's lots of different colors of lights on a rock stage. They happen to choose the two from fucking Empire Strikes Back for a reason.
I see orange or red. I mean, it could be red. This is a reproduction. I don't know how... Okay. Accurate the color reproduction
we'll
is on this piece of garbage.
And we'll see how many use just those two colors.
Okay, and then we'll come to a conclusion.
None concerts. That's how many. Clearly, it's intended as an Empire Strikes Back reference.
Well, I would think if it was, they would put them in the costumes from Empire Strikes
it's
Back.
It's a reference to all. We're just missing some Jedi here, but didn't this poster... When did this poster originally get released?
I don't know. I'm feeling a new hope.
This will answer that question. What is there a copyright date in the corner?
And if anything, that sucks for you, because then you'd have to acknowledge this poster was the inspiration for the cinematography for Empire Strikes Back. Wouldn't that suck?
There's I don't see a copyright in the corner. Trying to look up more information, okay. But
like, think of the moment, of course, that everyone talks about where Han is being put into Carbonite, and she says, "I love you."
Kashyyyk.
She says, "I love you," and he says, "I know." And there is, like, you know, it is melodramatic, but there's nothing in that original film that even hints at any sort of character moments like that. Nothing. They're just on a journey, a quest, which is fine. I still love the first Star Wars movie, but it's just, it's a very obvious improvement when you get to the second one.
You're not gonna like this.
I'm not.
Neither of you are. It's 1999 release.
Ooh.
Star Wars fan club exclusive.
Yeah.
That's
so obviously Empire's are. I love it. That's proving exactly what I said.
Oh. It didn't come out during a specific era of any of the original.
I didn't say it did. I just said they clearly picked lights for the concert that look like Empire Strikes Back.
I get more of a New Hope vibe from it personally.
From that poster?
Yeah.
You're fucking nuts. Anyway. Okay.
So, should we mention that, I guess if anybody hasn't heard the Star Wars premiums, that we're going to have them have a little deal in December for them?
Sure.
Well, I mean, we kind of screwed ourselves with our price points. It's not like we can really put any of these on sale, but we're going to do a 2-for-1 with both the original trilogy and the prequels for the Star Wars premium podcasts. So if you haven't heard them, might be a good time to check them out before the new movie comes out. So I watched a movie called Fat City, which is a boxing drama with even less boxing in it than Creed and Rocky. I don't know if this was an influence on Rocky. I feel like it may have been, because just in terms of the grittiness and the down in the dumps boxing community, there's something about it that just feels like any of these guys could become Rocky, but that's not the movie that this is. Like, in a lot of ways, it's actually the anti Rocky, because it's about these guys. Stacy Keach is sort of a washed up former pro boxer. Jeff Bridges is this young guy who's just learning to box, but he's never really boxed professionally before, and they kind of have a chance encounter in a boxing gym, which really just looks like, or actually it is the YMCA, I believe, where they meet. And they kind of spar a little bit, and Stacy Keach says, "Hey, you got something. You should go see my former trainer, and he'll hook you up." And the movie kind of goes off from there. And, you know, as I said, there isn't really a ton of boxing in the movie. It's more Stacy Keach kind of gets inspired and wants to kind of get back into fighting. Jeff Bridges has this whole thing where he gets a girlfriend, and then she gets pregnant, and then his life kind of goes down this other path. But it is a very bleak film. And there's a long stretch in the middle where Stacy Keach's character meets up with, what's her name? Oma, a girl named Oma. He meets in a bar. She's an alcoholic, played by Susan Terrell. And she's a pretty memorable character. I mean, I think we had a junk mail a while back about best drunk performances, if I'm not mistaken. Did we have that?
Mm-hmm.
This movie, I don't know if this ever came up in the comments, but it's got to be near the top, because these guys, in particular her and Stacy Keach, are seemingly drunk for most of the movie, and it's very believable. But they're characters you grow to like, and, you know, it is a slow film. Like, it's to put it in perspective, you start watching the movie and it opens with this song. I think it's a Kris Kristofferson song. Stacy Keach is just kind of getting out of bed, and I feel like, and maybe this isn't exactly how it plays out, but in my head, he rolls out of bed and it takes basically an entire song for that to happen. He sits up, and then you get the title of the movie with him looking into the camera, and then a whole new song starts, and you have to sit through a whole new song. So it's definitely not in a hurry to get where it's going, but I love the movie. It was just something I felt a lot of memorable characters and a real sense of realism and authenticity to it. And, you know, just a reminder that not everybody goes rags to riches. You know, some people are kind of stuck where they are, and as much as they try, they can't get out.
I've got the Blu-ray of this.
The Twilight
Time? Didn't have time to watch it, though.
I think you'll probably like it. It kind of, maybe this is a random, I don't know if I have a good explanation for why this is, but I feel like it reminded me a bit of Stroke Check a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Hmm. Well, I'll try to watch it, Sean, and then we can...
hash it out?
Hash it out over a coffee.
Okay, sounds good. Frank?
I watched... Oh, you better get the, I don't know the director's name. Blue is the Warmest Color, which I think is from 2013. I think some people were talking some shit that we didn't talk about it on the show.
Well, it is a foreign film.
That's true, and I will have some comments about that as well. Directed by... Maybe I should look it up.
Abdelatif Kashish?
I think.
Kashik.
Kashik. Sounds good. I don't know if that's how it's pronounced.
Five Sons of Kashik. I loved it. It's...
Now,
I was really surprised.
Was it the...
Why were you surprised?
Because I don't know why I was surprised, but I was. Hmm. It was very long, 3 hours, relationship drama.
Was it DFDS?
It isn't. It's, to me, again, I find that the French title, which is La Vie d'Adèle, which is the main character's name, much more appropriate. Like, I feel like it is a look at her life and... like an emotional look at her life. Like it uses very extreme close-ups, and it's her, you know, coming to terms with her sexuality, this major relationship in her life and heartbreak and all these aspects. And it's like, her performance is absolutely amazing. I don't know how it wasn't nominated. Like, it won the Palme d'Or, but I don't know if it's not eligible for Oscars or what, but it's insane to me that year it was not nominated. So
I think there was some weird reason why it wasn't eligible.
It wasn't eligible? Is that what it was?
I think, but it was nominated for a Golden Globe.
Okay. But Adele is played by, her real name is, I'm going to screw this up too, Adele Exarchopoulos.
Sounds great. Sounds perfect.
And I can't believe how good she is in the movie. Like, she feels, talking about realism, like, she feels so real. And one of the first scenes is her eating spaghetti, and you talk about gummo and eating spaghetti. Like, this rivals that with a scene eating spaghetti. And I would,
sorry, I'm only interested in people who eat spaghetti in the bathtub.
She had me from the second she was eating spaghetti, and she, like, you're just on this journey with her and her, like, discovering who
she is.
That's
why you want to see Brooklyn so bad.
Why?
Have you seen the trailer?
No.
Oh, well, it's her
eating spaghetti?
Trying to politely eat spaghetti.
Oh, I didn't know that. Interesting. but obviously this movie is not about her eating spaghetti. It's the core of it.
It's about her eating pussy.
That's true. It's about her relationship with...
A little angel hair pasta.
With Léa Seydoux. And, I mean, first you get a glimpse of her in high school and coming to terms with this, and... you get this sense of alienation, and it's palpable with her character and her, like, just living her life and the heartbreak and all these other emotions. Like, I don't know. It definitely affected me. And, it wasn't perfect. There's a part in the movie where, like, it skips over some pretty major stuff. I think, anyway, I think you could make an argument as to why it is skipped over within the context of the character. But I think, like, if this is her life, I'd like to see that a bit more. But I like, it stuck with me for a few days. I was definitely, it was an interesting, like, character movie that, I don't know, just felt completely authentic.
Nice.
But a couple things. So when talking about foreign films, right? So first of all, like I said, the French title is much better to me. It's like it's Her Life. And now it's called, in English, Blue is the Warmest Color.
That's a better title, if you ask me.
It isn't, though, because now there is a lot of blue in the film. And now I'm drawn to the color blue. Like, I'm noticing every time I see blue, it's distracting.
Like, and that just is, like a James Cameron movie.
Whereas if they hadn't even had that in the title, I probably wouldn't have noticed. I've talked about how I can be oblivious to certain things, like tracking shots or...
So or you prefer to be oblivious.
Subtext. I prefer
or
it,
suns
yeah.
not being moons.
Oh, it was... I did. Give me a break. Now, like that one, I was starting to sweat a little bit 10 minutes after, but that's okay. anyway. And then another reason, like, I just feel like with foreign films, there's obviously something lost in the translation. And I can't really pinpoint it, but with this movie, I can pinpoint something that I think would make a difference in the writing of the movie. So they're having a confrontation and they're talking about an affair or a fling she has with coworkers. And in the subtitles, it's reading like, was it a male colleague? Was it a female colleague? And it's all this, like, it feels more drawn out. But when you listen to the French words, like, the way you articulate male or female, it's just with like une or une, right? And it's very subtle. And when you hear how that dialogue plays out in French, it's much more poetic or lyrical than it is in subtitles. So clearly, like, great writing or great scenes can be dumbed down a bit with translation. And it's not like the whole movie's bad, but I'm aware of that when I'm watching foreign films. And I just... I probably watch more English movies because clearly I can take in, there's nothing lost in translation in those, right? I can focus on the performances.
All of the terrible writing.
Sure.
As so, is.
But at least I know I'm getting what was intended.
Yeah. I mean, like it is a problem. It does hold foreign films at a distance a little bit.
But that was a clear moment where I could understand what was happening in French, and it's better written in French than it is in subtitles.
Yeah, it makes sense. But at the same time, it's like, you know, you're getting a completely different feel than you would from a North American film, right? So it's, you might lose a little bit in the translation, but is it worth it to try and grasp that because you're getting something you would never get from a North American film? Or
sure, and ideally you could learn every language and you know, take it in as they were intended to be.
Right. Or we just wait for the universal translator to come along and we're golden.
But it was very good.
Cool. I did see here that it didn't qualify for the Oscars because it had to open in its home country by the end of September and it came out in October.
So why isn't it eligible the next year?
That I don't know.
Anyway, I
feel based
like
on when it was released
this
in the U.S.
probably should have won, like, the it would beat whoever won the last 10 Oscars, I'd say.
Wow. Okay.
Is this or Nothing But Trouble? What's the better film?
Better? It's not the same question.
I didn't watch anything else.
Well, when I did want to say, I did not know it was Criterion when I watched it. Until I bought it after the fact. I don't think it qualifies as Criterionitis.
He watched it, realized it was Criterion, and then immediately bought it.
No. I watched it, rated it on Letterboxd. Then when Black Friday came, went to buy it. Like, ooh, Criterion.
Wait, what face did you make?
Ew, it was
gross.
there was half intrigued, half... I was torn, clearly. That was a perfect torn face.
What were you torn by?
Intrigue yet self-awareness of what I would, the persecution I would endure for buying this Criterion.
And I wouldn't persecute you. Yeah. You are the inventor of Criterionitis. It's a self-persecution.
You discovered
self-loathing
disease.
It makes me so happy to know that I watched it not even knowing it was Criterion. It's not Criterionitis. If you're not aware, it's Criterion when you watch
it.
It's
a great feeling.
Stars.
It's like when you hear a song on the radio and you're like, that sounds good. What is that? And you find out it's like a band you already like and know. And you're like, fuck, I do like them. Yeah. Like, no, no preconceptions at all.
Totally.
Okay. So, I thought you saw Spotlight, or do you not want to?
Oh, right.
Or do you want to say?
Did it? I even log that?
No.
I didn't?
No.
I thought I did.
Ooh, that could be a big faux pas.
Jeez.
How long has it been now, Jay?
Well, we were I thought you might not have logged it because there was a partial.
Oh, no, I did log it.
You
did?
Yeah. Oh, fuck. I missed that one.
Sometimes you log stuff and it comes up on your ratings, but not on your.
Well, that
it for only, me personally, or just people in general.
No, on the feed, if you log multiple before. Things in a row in the same sitting, it'll only put the last one.
Maybe
on,
I put
on
the,
someone else's feed.
Maybe I put the wrong date or something because it's not coming up. Or maybe I didn't put a date. It's not coming up in my diary page. But
it
is there
is
in
it private,
my
maybe?
My watched.
I just know I've rated things before, and it's kind of what you're saying, Jay. It doesn't track a date for it. It just goes as you rated this movie. And because of that, it doesn't go in your chronological list of stuff you recently watched on Letterboxd.
Hmm. Well, yeah, I did log it. I guess I just didn't put it. Anyways, let's spend a little more time figuring out what the problem is here. I liked Spotlight a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was an engaging procedural, just watching them essentially doing good reporting and it being kind of focused on that. It is, you know, it just tells the story very straightly. It does feel a little bit like a TV series in that there's not a lot going on other than this investigation. You know, you get a little bit of character stuff here and there, but otherwise it just feels like they're on a mission to, you know, get the story out, and we're just watching that happen, and it's told in a very almost televisual fashion, which is fine. I don't know that this story really calls for much more, but when you think about, you know, I think that a lot of comparisons are made to All the President's Men, and that movie is still much better than Spotlight, and has a little more of a an atmosphere to it, and you know, the meeting with Deep Throat in the parking lot, and so I think that's still a much better film. But this was an engaging watch, and the performances were good, although maybe a little showy.
Yeah.
At times, I like Mark Ruffalo a lot, and I like Michael Keaton, and Rachel McAdams was great, and the other guy was good. But you know, at times it's like, especially with Michael Keaton, you can see like he's got a lot of tics that are Michael Keaton-isms, like biting the side of his lip.
He wants he wants that statue bad. So,
yeah. You know. But yeah, it was good. It was very good.
Cool. Does it make up for The Cobbler?
I didn't see The Cobbler. You saw that at TIFF, right?
Mm-hmm.
You used a TIFF ticket on The Cobbler.
What's wrong with that?
Waste of money.
Why?
He had high hopes.
I guess he did, yeah.
There's nothing out about the movie when I saw it.
There was what?
There was no, like, publicity. There was nothing out about the movie, like, if it was good or bad.
Did it not come out not long after that?
It didn't even come out in theaters.
No?
No.
It just...
It kind of went...
Disappeared?
It might have come in select theaters, but yeah, it was kind of like a almost direct to...
VOD trash?
Kind of, yeah.
It was VOD trash.
But it is weird, because, I mean, this director, Tom McCarthy, is pretty... People seem to dig his stuff. I don't know if I've seen any of his other movies. I mean, I haven't seen that.
You've seen The Visitor,
I haven't seen The Cobbler. No, I haven't seen The Visitor. And The Station Agent, haven't seen. And Win Win, I have not seen. So
I haven't seen any of them either.
What about you, Frank?
What?
You saw Win Win, didn't you?
No, I've seen Station Agent. That was a long time ago. The Cobbler. The Visitor. That's it.
Okay. So I watched this movie called Dope, which was a big Sundance hit this year. And didn't know too much about it. Knew it was kind of this coming-of-age story. And it had, you know, there was definitely a vibe of 90s hip-hop was involved in some way. And, you know, it is these kids that are into 90s hip-hop. And that's you know, a large part of the soundtrack, which, you know, I'm cool with. That's something that hasn't quite been overused and I'm a fan of, so I'm cool with that. But it did strike me as strange. I mean, the movie's kind of... It's fun, but it's kind of all over the place. Like, it's a little bit of a mess, I feel like. And, you know, you've got these kids that... It's set in, like, contemporary times, like today. But these kids are into 90s hip-hop. That's their thing. And but then at the same time, they have this punk rock band, which I don't like. You know, it kind of just becomes this thing where you're trying to put the pieces together of what these people are into. And it's like, I guess, sure, they could be, but it doesn't totally mesh. But, you know, it's not like that stuff didn't really make or break the movie. I mean, it's kind of a I guess it's been compared a little bit to Friday. I don't know if that's totally accurate, but it's sort of a lighthearted tale of these kids who they live in Inglewood, so they're kind of in the projects and they get tied up in this drug deal. But it's light, it's comedic for the most part. So what happens is, like, this drug dealer puts some drugs in the one guy's bag and then he comes to school the next day and he finds the drugs and he's kind of told, okay, well, you have to deliver the drugs or else people are going to be after you. And kind of leads to this point where he has to actually try to sell the drugs himself. And I was okay with it up to that point. Like, it was kind of like this kind of fun heist movie and adventure, and you didn't know where it was going to go. But then when it gets to the part where he has to kind of sell the drugs, I found like it really bogged down. Like, it becomes about using the internet to sell the drugs. And there's this whole sequence where it's like they have this video they try to make go viral to sell the drugs, and it kind of becomes about that a little bit. And then it loops back around, and by the end of the movie, all of a sudden it's trying to have this deep, important message. I didn't really understand what the message was. Like, the idea that these kids are, you know, they're black, they're from the projects, and but they're nerds. They keep referring themselves as nerds, and that the one guy wants to get into Harvard. And so, like, I don't know, there's like this weird, I don't know, like it's questioning, like, you know, can I be from the projects and have all this stuff going on and also be this kid who wants to get into Harvard? And I don't know, it kind of fell flat for me at that point. So I thought it was okay. I thought it was, you know, had some moments, had some energy, had some flashiness to it. That was kind of fun. Liked the soundtrack. But, you know, ultimately kind of falls into that category of Sundance hype that didn't quite pay off in the end for me.
That it?
I think so.
All right. I watched Fruitvale Station, which I had yet to see.
Speaking of Sundance hype.
Is that where the hype built for this thing?
I think so.
Yeah. I thought it was...
Frank's itching to get to this one.
I thought it was... I watched it.
He's got the Kinez itch.
It's pretty good. How have I never come up with that before? That's good. I thought it was okay. I certainly didn't think it was great. I thought once the actual incident started to happen, it definitely picked up and there was a tension there. And I think the aftermath of the incident is interesting as well, and how the family deals with it, and even, you know, just a shot of them taking off sensors or all that stuff, I thought worked and like gave you the impact of, you know, one life and who's affected by it and how something this traumatic can affect so many people. I thought that was conveyed there. I just thought the first like 2/3 mostly of the day leading up to that was just so over the top. And I'm sure this is what most people, if they have complaints, complain about, the idea that, you know, he just seems like the nicest guy in the world. He's changing everything about his life. dumping drugs in the water, picking up dogs that are hurt. And I feel like I would. So I didn't know that much about the actual incident when it happened. Like the seeing the footage in at the beginning of the movie was the first time I'd seen it.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't know. After watching the movie, I went back and looked at some of the video from it, and it's more accurate in its depiction than I thought it was watching it. Like, it felt really overdramatic, but then when I saw it, it's a lot of that is really there. And if anything, I feel like it maybe doesn't capture how much chaos was happening at the time of the real thing. And it does feel like something that, I know we've talked about this before, like when something is a true story, dramatizing certain aspects of it just seem fake. And you're always asking, did that really happen? Is that really what he did on his last day? And it's almost not fair to the movie. And if someone told me, yeah, all these things happened on that day, maybe I would like it a bit more. But it just, that beginning of the movie is just too much. It's, you know, too, like him helping the girl at the counter figure out how to cook fish. And then she's on the bus later that night. And all this stuff just felt too manufactured.
Well, I think
it's a disservice to the character, if anything. Like,
I mean, I don't know. It's been a little while since I've seen it. But I do think that a lot of it is fictional. I think they've said that. I don't think they know that. But I didn't necessarily think, like, to me it was giving you somebody to root for. I thought, you know, Michael B. Jordan has a way of winning you over pretty quickly. And
it's been a while since I've watched it too, but why do we necessarily need someone to root for in that situation?
Yeah.
Well, because you're following this guy for like a whole day, and
but it,
you're just waiting for something to happen.
The point of the movie is it shouldn't matter how nice.
Yeah, for what happens to him, that's not something where it's dependent on the person being a good person. That's what makes it feel like an after school special. If it's just a normal person who's flawed, and I seem to remember there are elements of that, like he's coming from.
He is trying
to,
like,
has a checkered past. It's
right.
Change things.
But the idea of that shift makes it seem just manipulative and a little bit, I don't know.
So much to the point where the girlfriend has to make a joke about, like, he dumps a huge bag of weed and then goes and gives someone part of it that was going to buy that bag of weed. And the girlfriend says, like, I could slap you right now. Like, they have no money. He lost his job and he dumped, which to me is kind of makes sense. It does seem kind of dumb, but it's there to give you this. He's changing his life. And this is that do or die moment. And he finally had it and it was taken away from him.
Even if he isn't changing his life, he still doesn't deserve shot in cold blood by a cop.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I get that that criticism of it. I guess what I'm saying is I was just pulled in and interested in what this guy was going about in his daily life. And then, you know, knowing that something's coming and you've got this tension building because of that. And that to me was an effective, I got something out of that movie, because to me it's like, you know, in you have all these things that are intersecting at a certain point in time that can totally change a bunch of people's lives. And, you know, obviously there's been tons of movies that have done stuff like that before, but, I thought it was powerful in that sense.
But it has everything. It has the mom telling him, don't take the train, like, don't drive, take the train, when you know the train is where this happens. And, the daughter saying, don't go outside, I hear gunshots, and I don't want you to go, I'm scared for you, daddy. And everything is just adding on to it and on to it and on to it. And it's just, it's too much. The movie was definitely better for me for the last third, and like some of the emotional moments as a result of that. So I do have to ask the question, would that emotional moment have been as good without the first hour? And I think I don't know if it needs something in the first hour to get you familiar with his daughter or his girlfriend, but I don't know if it needs to go to the level that it does in the first hour.
It's a little bit of an extended one last day before retirement cop going out on the job and, you know, what do you think's going to happen?
Right.
I did like the scene when he's asking to use the bathroom and talking to the other guy about marriage and whether he regretted it or not.
Yeah, I think I just really
like
that.
Part of it does also feel like, oh, now he's actually thinking about getting married too on this day. And
right.
Like he's about to change. And you know what? I think maybe I will get married now. Like all these things happened on.
Right.
And you could look at it as a metaphor too, right? That maybe all these things didn't happen that day, but
yeah,
that could have been where he was going.
Yeah.
Or that's fine too. But I really think that first hour could be improved a lot.
I just really like that it took place on New Year's Eve as well. I thought that was kind of an interesting, you know, year.
You're adding this to your New Year's Eve lineup for every year?
Might have.
You're going to watch this in Gary Marshall's New Year's Eve?
The incident did happen on New Year's Eve.
Yeah. I'm not saying that that's a conscious choice by the filmmaker. I'm just saying I think that, you know, makes the film, you know, because he's out with all these people, like all these interactions are just a natural part of what would happen on New Year's Eve.
So. Yeah, I could see that. And I would say something I complained about, like the gunshots that the daughter hears is actually fireworks, and it contextualizes that in a way that makes sense, but it's still
it's a bit much.
A little too much.
Okay. Anything else?
No.
All right. Well, we do have some junk mail. Filmjunk@gmail.com is the address where you can reach us. So we'll start with a quick one from Tim. This was a response to the Spielberg Sci-Fi Premium. And he says, I wasn't putting together a grill, but I was framing a picture while I listened. You might have mentioned this, but Minority Report, I think, has a certain noir angle with MVS secretly being a killer and weird almost black and white palette and getting Tom Cruise into that position in the end of the movie. This might even be mentioned. Spielberg even talked about this while promoting. There's also a very Philip K. Dick twist when Tom Cruise is jailed. The jailer guy says something as he's giving Cruise his halo, something like, I heard it's not so bad. It's like a very real dream. You see what you want to see. There's some sort of camera move which implies everything after the halo might be Tom Cruise's in-jail dream. Thanks for keeping the junk coming hard through the end of the year.
Sorry. We talked about that in the original review.
Yeah.
That was the big point of contention, that the ending... Because before rewatching Minority Report, the thing I always remembered about Minority Report is that the ending blows it to a degree. But I completely forgot about that theory when we talked about it on the premium.
Yeah, me too.
Not that I think it's, you know, that's true. It's, you know, another Total Recall sort of moment where it could go either way. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe that makes more sense. But still, that's a long, you know, time to endure what is just a dream.
Yeah.
If that is the case.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting, I guess. I had forgot about it as well, and it certainly didn't pop up in my face while I was watching it, so mm-hmm. it's not something that I don't think is super obvious, but I kind of like it. It's kind of cool. I'm sure it's there on purpose to a certain degree, so. Okay, Dan... in Yorkshire, UK, says, hi, Film Junkers.
Sorry, just if that's the case, though, mm-hmm. and it's the idea is you can just dream whatever you want or live however you want, why would he dream that the guy that he otherwise knows, trusts, and respects is the murderer?
Yeah, I mean, it's just...
It doesn't make sense that he would want to...
It's like he's trapped in his own private hell or something, maybe, but he's dreaming that he's successfully
Well, I don't think it's like he's trapped in his own private hell. I think it just doesn't make sense that he would dream that. If he can dream whatever he wants, why would he even be thinking that?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like the whole Interstellar thing too, right? Where it's like they say your life will flash before your eyes or whatever. And so you could interpret it that way, but then it's a long stretch before, like, that's a lot of time to be spent in a dream or whatever. So Dan says, "Hi, film junkers. On the back of your discussion regarding the proposed remake, reboot, reimagining of Nolan's Memento, a film I find difficult to see how improvement could be implemented, I was driven to wondering what Nolan could be conceiving as his next film."
Aww.
Oh. Somebody else want to read?
No.
Do you want me to read it?
Almost made it.
Take a swig of your ginger ale there.
I will. Here you go, Frank.
I got it here. Oh, fuck, it's pretty long. I was driven to... The thing is where you left off. I was driven to wondering what Nolan could be conceiving as his next film. Given that he is no stranger to getting involved in existing properties, talk of manga classic Akira has been batted about, and original concepts alike, and having success in both disciplines to equal measure, the possibilities seem endless. I got into an ongoing discussion with a friend about what could be his next or future project, and how he could apply the Nolan stamp to this production. Given that he seems to embrace the elements of science, mystery, humanity, psychological drama, and moral ambiguity, amongst other things, we tried to see how we could involve these concepts to existing properties. My conclusion was that something like H.G. Wells' Invisible Man would be an ideal candidate, purveying just the right amount of mystery, intrigue, and pseudoscience, with plenty of room for maneuver within the genre. What are your thoughts, and do you think there is any genre he hasn't explored that would suit his style? Horror, maybe? Keep up the excellent work, Dan, Yorkshire.
I'd like to see Christopher Nolan tackle an ultimate wig fail compilation.
That's pretty good.
Sean, your desktop, it seems to be a upskirt of a robot, futuristic robot of some kind.
Yeah, I visit the site robotupskirts.com.
Perhaps the
check
one
it out.
From the Aerosmith Just Push Play album cover.
Maybe.
maybe this is an obvious one, but I would say spy movie. Kind of already did it a bit with Inception. There's always been talk of him doing a Bond movie. I'd just like to see an original spy thriller from Nolan.
Let's do it, Chris. Found footage. Just for Frankie.
Don't do it. Never go. What about a macro budget found footage?
Like a $200 million
found footage movie.
Found footage in space, but actually in space.
I like it.
I just want, you know what? I'm happy with him sticking with original science fiction ideas. I'd be fine if one of them had horror elements or other genre elements, like something like Sunshine, but I think he is one of the few people that is filling that gap right now, so I wouldn't want to lose him there too. And we argued whether something like The Prestige is science fiction. I think it is. It's something in that vein, something with not necessarily. Like, what's...
Did you say you think it is?
No. Well, I think you could say it is.
Didn't you just say you think it is?
I don't think it is. You guys thought it was.
Oh, you said, I don't think it is.
I don't know what
I think you said. I think it is.
No, I was saying, I think you could include it in the type of movies that have, like,
just to,
sci-fi elements.
So we'll place a little context here. Just driving up today, I remember maybe last year, I was playing Frank some music, okay? Mm-hmm. And I was just like, oh, Frank, you know, being a fan of The Lion King. I thought maybe, you know, what would Frank like to listen to? So I think I played... I think this is what I... Yeah. And you said... You were like, eh, it's too African. And then somehow I was like, too African? Well, I think somehow Paul Simon came up because I think you can call me Al maybe because...
I think we were joking.
You like that? And I was like, well, Paul Simon is, you know, heavily influenced by African music. And he's like, no, no. And I was like,
I don't even
Graceland?
Like Paul Simon.
You don't think Graceland is heavily influenced by African music? Guy's got African music all over him. No, no, I don't see it. Doesn't register. And then just driving up today, I was like, yeah, and Paul Simon doesn't have African music or influenced by African music. He's like, no, I know it is. Yeah, definitely Paul Simon's.
That's not how it came up today.
Well, who cares how it came up? What the point being that you somehow originally thought one
thing,
and then naturally in this conversation took the exact opposite opinion.
No, that's not how the original conversation went down. I was probably half joking anyway.
Of course, you're never serious.
I'm just arguing and saying bullshit to piss you off. Uh-huh. And you take it as like this, my definitive line in the sand that this is how I feel about something, and I'm just shooting the shit, you know? I kind of like it, to be honest. I like to disregard stuff you recommend just to say, yeah. It's pretty good. I do like Tom Petty, so. Yeah, what were we talking about?
So the Prestige isn't science fiction, is what you were saying.
Frank's undecided.
I would not include it as science fiction.
It would just be a drama?
But in what we were talking about in the types of movies he makes, I don't know if you'd call it there's a supernatural element or obviously a twist that involves something that is in the realm of science fiction. That as long as he has elements like that in his movies or higher concepts, that's where I like him working the best. So,
well, we just saw Creed. What about a Christopher Nolan sports drama?
No.
I think that could be good.
I think anything he would do would be good. I don't care. I wouldn't presuppose to tell him what to do at all.
Christopher Nolan Western? World War II movie?
Cowboys versus Aliens remake.
Yeah.
Get it in the right hands. Get that IP in the right hands.
Christopher Nolan, Men in Black 4. You on board?
I'm obviously going to be on board with whatever
That's
he
the
does.
One thing he can't do is comedy. It's the only thing he can't do.
Is that true?
I don't know.
I think there's funny moments in some of his movies.
Yeah, there's a little... But there's no like laugh. Like he's pretty serious most of his films, I would say.
Some might say overly serious.
Mm-hmm.
I like him just the way he is, and he can do whatever he wants. I don't care.
All right.
I will say this though. Whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
Bring old Fisty back. Give him another chance. I know
Fisty doesn't want to come back. He's got his own thing going on.
He doesn't. Get those two back together.
Yeah.
Enough already.
I agree. All right, Chris in Toronto says, fellas, bear with me. The original Star Wars trilogy on Letterboxd obviously represents the films currently available for purchase. That said, the despecialized edition can also be logged. Question is, if I watch the despecialized edition, do I log it as such or do I log it as the official release? I've been logging it as the official release.
Well,
sometimes these questions don't really need us to answer them, I feel.
I mean, I would think you would log it as the despecialized edition.
I guess it depends if you really want to make a statement that that's the version you watched.
Well, okay, here's interesting. The Star Wars, which I watched the first one and then Empire, watched with Roman, who hasn't seen them in a long time. So he doesn't remember things about them. When I watch Star Wars and I watch the Blu-rays and it's got all the additional stuff, I can just kind of like, okay, look past all of the things that were added that are unnecessary.
Right.
But when you're watching with someone who isn't that familiar or hasn't seen them in a long time, you feel compelled to point out this wasn't actually in the original, because it's like the Jabba scene in A New Hope that they added. Not only is it technically terrible, I'm sure this has been said before, maybe we've even said it on the premium, but the fact that it's completely redundant, that we hear the exact same conversation with Greedo, and then it's essentially repeated with Jabba. The scene does not need to be there. It was taken out for a reason. So when that comes up and you're watching with someone, you feel the need to say, this is not, don't count this. Which made me realize these changes, I might be able to look past them when I'm watching the film, but they really are, a lot of the changes are garbage. They are unnecessary. On the other hand, there are things like in the Cloud City sequences in Empire, I don't mind some of the stuff they did with opening up the corridors to see the landscape, the Cloud City landscapes and stuff like that.
Yeah, you got to take the good stuff with the shitty stuff too, even cleaning up, you know, blue screen lines around some of the ships.
That stuff I am fine with.
Well, so I'm of the mindset, you got to take it all. You got to take all these other changes, but if you want that, or you watch it. I would like to see what it's like to go back and watch them without any cleanup at all. I bet it is. There are some good and great things that have been done with the remastering of those movies. That isn't a pure experience.
But the difference is, I mean, you look at, we talked about Spielberg, some of his special editions on that premium podcast, and he has since said, and I think he's had this attitude from the start, if he's going to release a special edition, he will always release the original version with it. So you can have both. And I mean, like if they released the non-special editions on Blu-ray, would you guys pick those up?
Yes, but they would never do that without remastering them.
Right.
If they did that, it would be remastered in 4K, just like every other movie.
I don't like they're.
But with those, it's not just a remastering. Like I think they're going in and cleaning things up with today's special effects technology. It's not just taking a master and, you know, like cleaning it up. They're changing the core of the movie to make it look better.
Yeah, they're getting rid of matte lines and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. At that point, that is not the original movie.
No.
So do you want the original movie?
I don't.
You don't?
No, the original, remastered. I agree with you. I would obviously want it with, like, some things changed, but then you're getting in this gray area.
Well, I don't even care if they, I'm just saying what in these, the new versions, I can say, okay, that's not completely a terrible choice and it doesn't stand out completely to me, but I would much prefer to have the original films as is. Obviously cleaned up, color graded, like any other, you know, restoration of a film.
Seems like every couple of months there's rumors that Disney's about to release the original versions and like nothing happens. So I don't know what's going on with that, but it's got to happen eventually.
I think it'll
right?
happen. Yeah.
All right, a couple more quick questions. This one's from Stanislav in Kazakhstan. Hello, Sean, Jay, and Frank. My first experience with the Film Junk podcast was the Only God Forgives episode. Personally, I loved this movie when everyone around was shitting on it, so when I listened to your podcast and realized you guys also liked this film, some of you very much so, I knew these are my boys. Since then, my love for the podcast grew only bigger and bigger. My question is not related to this film, though. After episode 530, where Jay unveiled his top 10 horror movies of the last decade, I was very surprised to find that there was no place for Martyrs. Pascal Laugier's 2009 film. Out of all of you, Jay's sensibilities and movies are closest to mine. By the way, I love Spring. Thanks for the rec. So it made me wonder, did he even watch this film? And if so, why no love for Martyrs? In my opinion, it's the best modern horror film out there. What do you guys think? I'd like to hear Sean and Frank's opinions as well if they had seen it. Sorry for a long letter and pardon my horrible English. Love the show. Stanislav.
About to sneeze, but it just left me.
I know there was a couple of movies that people had mentioned in the comments and they were wondering about. This was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Inside, was that one of the other ones?
Which I haven't seen.
Okay.
Martyrs I have seen, and I remember enjoying it when I saw it, but it just never didn't come to mind. So I guess for a reason.
Yeah.
I don't remember very much about it at this point other than it having some sort of... I remember thinking at the time, oh, this kind of reminds me of like a very aggressive, graphic, violent Lost episode. Because there is a point where what seems to be a fairly straightforward film, it takes a bit of a weird turn.
Yeah, I kind of had been meaning to watch it and never got around to it, but a little bit.
But intrigued. I wouldn't, even if I immediately had considered it, I don't think I would have included it in my top 10. I know I wouldn't have.
Okay.
You didn't have Death Proof.
Yeah.
Or did you?
No.
That's a good point.
It's fucked up.
So, last question. DK from Poland says, hi, Junkers. Quick question regarding Jay's Time Machine doc. Will it be distributed outside of Canada? Will it be available as a digital purchase? Any theatrical releases for other countries? As a loyal listener from junk country as Poland, I was wondering if I will be able to support this movie somehow. Keep on podcasting, guys. DK in Poland.
Well, I can make a announcement.
Ooh.
And I think I had mentioned this on a previous episode some time ago as kind of being a goal or a quote-unquote dream.
Cream dream. Supreme.
Cream dream. An idea. And it seems like it might come to fruition.
Mm-hmm.
Releasing How to Build a Time Machine as a feature-length animated GIF. Embeddable GIF that you can embed into your favorite website. Into a Twitter post, your Facebook feed, and it will just play. The only shitty thing is there's no audio. So
yeah.
It's just going to play as a low grade, I guess, kind of homage to some of the full motion video games that we've talked about before on here, like a sewer shark sort of look to it.
Remember how I was joking about how to build a time machine?
Yeah.
It's like the NXS or crisscross video
cuts.
You give me all the shots.
Yeah.
I cut it up.
Yeah. Maybe that's the way to release it. The raw footage in animated GIF. And then you
pick the order.
Yeah.
Well, this is good.
I'm loving it. Yeah.
So no other plans as far as...
If that doesn't work out, I don't know what will happen, but that's the goal.
Okay. But it does have distribution in Canada currently?
Via animated GIF. Okay. All right, fine. All kidding aside, let me just pop a Toffifei and I'll get to it in a second. Hold on.
Mm. Well,
I love Toffifei's.
Is it Toffifei or Toffifei?
Toffifei, bro. Broseph.
Looks like Toffifei to me.
Toffifei.
I don't see an accent aigu.
Toffifei.
It's Toffifei.
It might be Toffifei. It would make more sense because it's like toffee.
Coffee.
Not coffee. It doesn't taste like coffee at all. Dude.
Do you guys want to place a bet on the pronunciation of this?
I'd love to.
I don't like betting.
found something that is a bit of a sore spot for Jay, apparently.
What is it?
I don't know.
He's probably right. He's right about everything.
We do have distribution while you're looking for that in Canada currently. We hopefully will secure some sort of distribution in the States and hopefully not worldwide, but I know Beauty Day, we had it on iTunes in a bunch of different countries, so hopefully you will be able to access it. But I do believe we're going to be releasing it physically, so at least you could order it through Amazon.ca, kind of like Beauty Day currently. So that's the goal.
Toffee fee.
You really trust these?
Apparently it's German. It's a German thing.
Kind of like Krampus.
Yeah, kind of like. Oh, wait a minute. Now I'm on realitycheck.ca. The correct pronunciation is the first one you said.
Toffee fee.
It's not Toffee fee.
Yet it knew I'm correct again. Correct again, Toffee fee.
No.
La-dee-dee-dee, I'm correct again. Correct again, Toffee fee.
See, now when you see 15 pieces or boucher with two E's, there's an accent aigu on the E.
Yeah, but they don't want to alienate people by putting that on the
That
the
could
name.
Be their thing, man.
Yeah, that, the logo is not going to have your accent aigu.
So it's Toffee fee. Cool, man.
Good to know.
Wish I had put money on that.
All right. Thanks for the emails, guys. Filmjunk@gmail.com is the address you can reach us. Let's talk DVD and Blu-ray releases. We've got Mistress America, Amy, Cooties, Goodnight Mommy, Mississippi Grind, Momentum, Grace of Monaco, Tokyo Tribe, Fear the Walking Dead Season 1, Zoo Season 1, and Dennis Rodman's Big Bang in Pyongyang. And on Blu-ray, we've got Downhill Racer Criterion, Christmas Vacation 25th Anniversary Edition, Twice Told Tales, Queen of Blood, Love at Large, Robber's Roost, Fort Massacre, and the Gunfight at Dodge City. What's the pick of the week?
Well, I'm going to do Mistress America, but I have been itching. I've got Christmas Vacation on Blu-ray, but this is a 4K remaster.
Oh.
We're talking a 4 out of 5 picture quality here.
That's it for a 4K?
Yeah, unfortunately. But you got to upgrade, right? You got to upgrade to the 4K remastered Blu-ray, and then eventually when the 4K Blu-ray comes out, upgrade to the...
We got to think you're going to watch it at least once a year, right?
Yeah. So. I am itching to watch that, and I don't know if I can bring myself to watch the shitty version that I own currently.
Jeez. I don't know how I feel. I only have it on DVD.
Research. Unload yours on him.
$15.
We'll talk after. Anything for you, Frank?
Probably Mistress America. Is it Criterion?
No.
Yes, definitely Mistress America.
For me, Mistress America, and I want to see Amy and Goodnight Mommy. Not sure if I'll actually be picking them up, but...
Ooh, Goodnight Mommy, is that the German film?
I believe so.
Yeah, I'm curious about that as well. So I'll add that to my to-buy list.
Just an update. Man from U.N.C.L.E. has not gone below $20 since we first started.
It's too recent, man. You're going after the wrong thing.
It came out before Trainwreck. That's $12.75.
It didn't come out before Trainwreck.
On Blu-ray?
No.
Yeah, it did.
No, it didn't.
Yeah, it did.
There we go.
Thank God we're not compulsive gamblers.
Yeah, it did, man.
Maybe the same week, but definitely not before.
Well, definitely not after.
It came after.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think I'm wrong on this one.
All right. Well, but, you know, we gotta go to Amazon here and just verify. November 10th was the release date for Trainwreck.
This isn't looking good for me right now. I'm off my game today. Am I ever on my game? Is it?
And Man from U.N.C.L.E. November 17th.
Mm.
It's closer than I thought it was, but...
Definitely close. Definitely sweating. Definitely sad.
I can't wait for a year from now when this randomly comes up in conversation and Frank insists that Man from U.N.C.L.E. came out after Trainwreck. And claims that he insisted that all along. And when we say, but you said it came out before, you'll say, I was probably just joking.
All right. I'm good. Let's go home.
All right, Frank. You'll get him next time. Don't worry about it. So, next week on the show, are we reviewing Krampus?
Now, here's a question. I can raise this question because we're... Are you... So, Krampus. Krampus?
Do you want to get into this now?
No,
because I know
no.
what the discussion is going to be.
No, my question is, when you go and order your ticket at mm-hmm. the movie theater, are you going to be the guy that walks up and says, can I have one ticket for Krampus? Are you so confident
I'm going to buy it from a machine. I won't have any other interaction with
you. If humans. You had to interact, you would say Krampus. Right?
Save it for next week. That's all I'm going to say.
You're going to be the one guy that says Krampus. Along with the nerds that are like, it's pronounced Krampus.
All right. So I think that's what we're reviewing next week. Also out, Spike Lee's Chirac, which is on Amazon.
I think it's Select Chirac. Theaters.
Chirac? Also,
it's Chicago.
Right. Also, Hitchcock Truffaut is in select theaters. Life, which is the new Anton Corbin movie. Macbeth. MI5, which is not Mission Impossible 5. Youth. And Christmas Eve. Would like to get to reviews of Brooklyn at some point and something else.
I might see Macbeth.
Is that playing in Toronto? Yeah? Because I'm pretty interested in that too. Okay, so that's about it.
I think it is.
Thanks for listening. Stay tuned to filmjunk.com throughout the week. Follow us on Twitter at Dirty Frank with 3 R's and Dirty, at Jay Chiel and at Filmjunk. Until next time, we'll see you guys later.
I can't wait to talk about the narrative that for some reason they push VOD to theaters when it's horror. Like, clearly this thing looks like VOD trash, but... Oh, it's a horror movie. We'll make money if we put this in theaters.
So let's get to some spoilers for Creed. What's on your mind, Jay? Anything specific?
Well, I just liked the fact that they... I mean, you always expect... Okay, Rocky's going to die.
Mm-hmm.
This happened in Rocky V when he had his, you know, little health scare. Rocky Balboa came out and he was like, oh, Rocky's probably going to die. In the ring, maybe. But in this one, the trailer hinted at it with Rocky being sick.
Mm-hmm.
But they treat it in such a realistic way in that he is sick, but... It's not like the movie is spent with him in the hospital and Creed goes and has his fight to honor Rocky and then goes back and, you know, watches him die and says his goodbyes or something. Rocky discovers he has cancer. They use that as a great way to say, I'll fight if you fight. And then they both help each other. And it, you know, is a great character moment for Rocky when he's talking about, you learn a little bit about Adrian.
Mm-hmm.
And then him having to decide that now he has something to live for.
Yeah.
So, and then you get to the end And, you know, the fight is finished and it fades to black and it comes back up. I'm like, please don't have like a Rocky passes out in the locker room and then cut to Gravestone and Creed standing over and him. Now he's going to wear his shorts or his shorts. It doesn't. It just ends with Rocky is getting over his sickness or attempting to. And that's it, yep. Which I actually liked a lot.
Yeah, I agree 100% about everything you said. And then to the fade to black, to cap it off with like the stairs. And yeah. That's how they bring the stairs in and him being old. And just to get up the stairs is like a fight or his new version of fighting or, you know, to keep pushing as hard as he can no matter what and having reasons to do that. I just thought that was a perfect moment and a perfect, like, this movie's version of the stair sequence. It just captured everything about the movie.
And I was saying in the review that, you know, there was some visualizations of what you would imagine Rocky 20 to be like. And it's Rocky in the chemo chair with Creed training right beside him, yeah. Which could be taken as like, you know, why are we watching Rocky? They're making so many of these movies now. He's in a chair getting chemo and training someone, but it works 100%.
I forgot how much I love the hospital training montage. Mm-hmm. It was so good.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised, actually. I don't know if it said in the trailers exactly what, like, it was hinted at that Rocky's in the hospital, right?
It just says Rocky's sick. But in the trailer, it's like, okay, now the last act, Rocky's going to be in the hospital. But when you see the hospital bed in the trailer, that's one scene. He's in and out of the hospital.
Right. But, I mean, I thought I had read this somewhere, too. I thought it was going to be like a brain thing or something.
That's what Rocky 5 was.
Yeah, that's true. And then I think they kind of go back on that a little bit. But, you know, I was a little bit at first, like, the cancer thing. I thought, oh, I don't know if this is going to, where this is going to go. This seems like it could go in a lot of bad directions. But I loved the idea of him saying, you know what, thanks, but no thanks. I saw what happened to Adrian. I don't want to go through that. Mm-hmm. And like, to me, that's works perfectly for his character.
His performance of that.
Yep. And it works for the conflict between him and Donnie, and then having to, you know, make an agreement with each other, and perfect.
I know we've said that. I think we said this on the premium, but the names of the Rocky series, amazing. Adonis Creed. Mm-hmm. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty solid.
And like abbreviating to Donnie seems something you could like brush over, but that could have been a fail too. Everything about this movie could have been a fail. And in spite of everything, it succeeds on every level. Like, you want to talk about degree of difficulty, just attempting this movie, the degree of difficulty is insane.
So the one other thing I wanted to mention, and this is something that, I don't know, I maybe keeps it from being a 6 out of 5 for me or something, but I just feel like, you know, you get to that final fight and you're kind of thinking, well, there's only so many directions they can go with this. It's going to be something we've seen before. And you kind of have to, I mean, in a lot of ways, that's why you go to see a Rocky movie. I mean, you kind of have an idea of what you're going to get out of it and you want that, but you also want to be surprised a little bit. And I think it just comes down to like, let's just play that final fight out so long that you aren't really thinking about that anymore. You get pulled into the moment and it's not, you know, you're not sitting there going, I know exactly what's going to happen. And so, I mean, for me, I was fine with it. It is a little bit, you know, it just feels like we've seen that end to that fight before. And it is very similar to the first Rocky film, but
I thought when the moment where Creed gets knocked down, and like cutting back to all the moments, I thought that was great. And like the zoom in shot there. But I also thought, like, I don't know if this has probably been done before and it's why they didn't do it. Like intercutting it with the count. Like it seemed like, I don't know.
Like the flashes as they're counting.
Yeah. I'm guessing that's been done somewhere before. And
I don't know.
It just seems like an obvious, maybe it is too obvious a thing to do.
You hate it now?
No, I still think it would be better. Honestly.
Better to not do it?
No, to do it.
Oh.
The flashbacks?
Yeah, like...
Oh.
Because you're unaware of the count and what's going on, I think. Like, I, think that could have been equally as good. Maybe I'm sure they tried it. It probably sucks. That's my idea, so it probably sucks.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It wasn't.
But I love his shorts.
Yep.
Bringing back the Creed shorts. I did not. Apparently, that was in the previews.
I didn't see that.
I didn't really.
It is kind of a weird moment because he's fighting for his legacy so much, or to write it, to make his own and not depend on his father's. But it, you know, kind of makes sense that eventually he accepts that he's Creed's son.
Love his white gloves.
And by the end, yeah, it's either he's either going to win or he's going to lose, or he's going to spontaneously combust in the middle of the ring. Or maybe aliens will pick him up.
Or he's going to kill
the
other guy.
On the ship, even though he's leaving his family behind, his unk. He's leaving unk behind. But the idea of him, all you need is him realizing that he didn't have to depend on, you know, his father's name, even though he's in the ring technically because of his father's name, but still he holds his own.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you already kind of mentioned this in the main review there, Frank, but it did seem a little questionable to me, like how quickly he jumps up to fighting who he fights. And they do kind of explain it away as he has experience. He's fought, you know, however many fights in Mexico and stuff. But, you know.
But when you think about it, it makes more sense in this movie than it does Rocky 1.
Yeah, maybe.
Rocky jumps up to fighting the Creed in the first film, and he's in the same position. He's doing these small fights in these churches, and it's because it's an exhibition match. In this, it actually makes more sense that people would want to exploit the Creed name and immediately set up a fight. I mean, you get it in the ring where Rocky's friend keeps saying, like, oh, we got to do this as a Creed fight. This is going to be huge.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. They certainly do their best to justify it. And, you know, all things that are not, certainly not bringing down the movie for me, just kind of things that are not 6 out of 5.
What'd you think about the moment where he had to shit?
I loved it.
That was good.
The only thing, the Coogler, Ryan Coogler, is that his name?
Yep.
He needs a new Photoshop guy.
Yeah?
So the pamphlets?
They were kind of.
Now, but not only that, I watched Fruitvale Station before this too, and there's like a joke in it where he buys a white people card for his sister, and the card is clearly Photoshopped for the joke. And I've never seen a card that looks like this in my life. It is the most lame Photoshop job ever. This guy needs a new Photoshop.
Maybe he's doing his own Photoshopping.
Could be, but those pamphlets are awful. The cards in Fruitvale Station are awful. Get yourself a new Photoshop guy.
Or just get some real pamphlets.
Sure. These
Frank,
things exist.
That's it. Photoshop guys don't come cheap. You need a budget if you want to get good Photoshops done.
That's the other thing I love in the movie where you can sense there must be some non-actors in here. Like when Rocky brings him to that gym and introduces like the guys that will be working with him and all of the stuff of the referees explaining in the room, you know, how this is going to work. And there's a nice element of realism throughout the film, even though it has these big emotional moments that are, I wouldn't say they're melodramatic, but they're certainly, you know, dramatic. But I think the fight stuff, anything with the fighting and the training and the people Rocky knows and you know, him entering the gym and all these people coming up to him, and it feels very realistic to me.
Could have used a little more of the, you know, chasing chickens and kind of weird improvised training stuff in the movie, but you know, what are you gonna do?
Fair enough. I love the line when he's jumping rope and the bell goes off and he says, that bell doesn't mean you're dismissed, that bell means hell. Love that.
Yeah,
great. Everything I had hoped. Everything. And who knows? It might not be a 6 out of 5, but it could be a number 1.
No chance.
Smell a controversy.
It will not be your number one.
No?
Nope.
Okay. Any other thoughts?
Nope, I don't think
Would you want to see a sequel? Where should the sequel go?
Why not?
I'll see a sequel, yeah.
I just worry that...
At some point, Rocky's going to die, though.
Well, that's true. At some point, Stallone's going to die. But, I mean, it's just... You know, again, you kind of get back to, like, how do you break out of stuff we've already seen? And
well, it's the thing is, it doesn't, and I would say we were comparing this to Mad Max. Same with Mad Max. I don't feel like a sequel to that is a guaranteed success for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would only want a sequel if they felt compelled to make one because there's definitely more story to be told.
Right.
I would be absolutely fine if Creed is the end of this franchise. Yeah. But if they make another one and it's as good as this, then that would be great.
Agreed. All right. Thanks for listening.